Today TV with Cam Edwards.
Good Tuesday to you. Thank you for tuning in to another edition of Cam and Company, fueled by Hornady right here on NRA TV. Cam Edwards, your host, coming to you from beautiful Farmville, Virginia today. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Cam Edwards, your host, glad that you have joined us today. Thumbs up, by the way, to Cameron Gray. Day before a holiday, sometimes it's difficult to get guests. Everybody's, you know, already making their plans. They're heading out for the beach. We got a great show for you. Stacey Washington is going to join us a little bit later on in the hour, talking about some of the news stories of the day. Also, Jen Jakes from JenJakes.com, the truth about gun violence in America, her latest for the truth about guns. Also, Andrew Langer from the Institute for Liberty, talking about some of the big news and issues of the day, including in the aftermath of this shooting at the Capital Gazette newspapers in Annapolis. Calls in Maryland for more gun control, but they couldn't really tell you what exactly they want because they can't really point to a law that would have stopped this attack at the newspaper offices. You can point to, again, better prosecution, fewer plea bargains, not allowing people to plead down felonies down to misdemeanors. But in terms of an actual gun control law, they're kind of at a loss, but they're not at a loss for words in terms of pushing for some unnamed law at this point, or laws. Jed Babin from the London Center for Policy Research joins us on the program next hour as well. This is a crazy story. I expect it's not going to get a ton of attention here, but in Europe, an Iranian diplomat has been accused of leading a plot to attack the Paris Conference of Opposition Groups, which is a big, lengthy title. But this was a big meeting in Paris. A number of Iranian opposition groups were meeting in Paris to discuss their strategies for regime change. We're going to be folks like Rudy Giuliani there in attendance. And according to police in several European capitals, the Iranian regime was plotting a terror attack on the hotel complex where the conference took place. They have arrested several individuals, including, again, an Iranian diplomat, a 46-year-old diplomat at the Iranian embassy in Austria, who police described as a contact person for two other suspects, a husband and wife of Iranian origin, who were stopped in Brussels by police on, on Saturday. They found an ignition device and 500 grams of TATP, which is a homemade explosive. And this Iranian diplomat was a point of contact for the couple. French police arrested a 54-year-old described as an accomplice. Authorities said that they had monitored communications among all four of the individuals. Belgian law enforcement officials said investigators believe that the suspect couple, the husband and wife there, were taking orders from the Iranian diplomat. Austria's actually stripped this diplomat of diplomatic status, which is a pretty big deal, and has summoned the Iranian ambassador for discussions of his status. So we'll talk about this with Jed Babin of the London Center for Policy Research. Cameron, just out of curiosity, have any of the Obama bros weighed in on this? Tommy Vitter, John Favreau?
I don't think so.
Ben Rhodes?
No.
No?
I might have missed it, but I don't think so.
Okay. Yeah, just curious. I mean, I doubt that they will. I'll be sure to download the latest Pod Save America and tune in. No, I won't. Are you kidding me? This is my new favorite go-to line, Cameron. I'd rather be pudding out of Michael Moore's belly button. That's my new go-to.
I like it. I had to think about that one for a second. Nice.
Right. And then you have to not think about it for a few more minutes afterwards, because that's like it's a middle image that you just really don't want to dwell on, that much. Coming up in hour three, Dr. A.W.R. Hawkins at Breitbart will be with us on the program. We also have our hero of the day. We have our deal of the day. We have our good guy. And I rarely do this, but we're going to try to do this here, on Twitter. You can tweet us at Cam and Company. I am very curious. You know, tomorrow is Independence Day. Yes, it is the 4th of July on the calendar, but we celebrate Independence Day. We don't just celebrate the 4th of July, right? Because then we can celebrate the 3rd or the 5th or the 6th or whatever. We celebrate the colonies declaring independence in 1776, the establishment of the United States of America. And over the course of the program this afternoon, we'll talk about the Declaration of Independence. We'll talk a little U.S. history. Because, honestly, I mean, it's amazing. We look back at those words from the Declaration of Independence and this incredible moment in time where the founding fathers of the American people came together and they said, yes, we are a new nation. That really isn't what happened. Some members of that new nation said, yeah, we're fully on board with this. There were some Americans who did not willingly join in this new union. And again, this was very early on in the Revolutionary War. July 4th, 1776 was a little bit more than a year after Lexington and Concord. Nobody really, there were a lot of Americans who thought, well, this is a really bold step. Are we really sure we want to take this step into independence? There's got to be some talking to, there's got to be some reasoning with Parliament, right? If we can appeal to the king, he'll listen to us, even if Parliament's not listening to us. There's a lot of reluctant Americans who didn't want to make that final break. And then, just a few weeks after the signing of the Declaration of Independence, you had a huge British fleet arrive on the shores of New York City, and some Americans who thought that this was a great idea to declare independence in July were kind of freaking out by mid-August and early September, because the British fleet that had arrived and the soldiers that it was disembarking onto the shores of Long Island, they didn't really seem to be in the mood to talk, to negotiate, to back down. And this was an incredibly tumultuous time period in our nation's history. We're living through a tumultuous time period in our nation's history now. 1776 makes 2018 look like 1982. And nothing really big happened in 1982, which is why I made that comparison. Because it makes today look calm, what they were dealing with. So I hope that tomorrow, as you're celebrating with family and friends, that you think back and maybe take a little time to read a little history, learn a little bit more about what those Americans were going through back then. But obviously tomorrow is going to be a day to celebrate. And I want to know, like, a couple of things. Do you have any Independence Day traditions in your family? And in your community, in honor of our friend Selena Zito, who, you know, travels and celebrates small towns across the country, I want to know, what does your town do for Independence Day? What special things do you have? We talked with NRA President Oliver North on the show yesterday. He said tomorrow they'll be taking part in the parade, and then he'll actually be reading the Declaration of Independence at a local church there. Up in Northern Virginia, Loudoun County. I looked at the Farmville Herald here in Farmville today. We don't have a parade. We have our fireworks tonight, which I still don't understand. But July the 3rd, Farmville has its fireworks. So, okay. I guess that's because 4th of July, you got so many, you know, family barbecues and people setting off fireworks on their own property that in order to get the community together, you can't do it on the 4th. You got to do it on the 3rd. But I did see Cameron, and I didn't realize that we did this here in the Farmville area, but there is a hot dog eating contest tomorrow, mid-afternoon.
That's pretty sweet. Are you entering?
I think I am, actually, yes. Nice. I think a buddy of mine and I are going to have at least a friendly competition, because I don't think I can win the whole thing. But I think I can
beat
my
buddy. What kind of attitude is that?
Listen, I know my limitations.
All right.
This was 20 years ago. No problem. You know, I don't believe it or not, I don't have the belly to win a hot dog eating contest anymore. But
well, you don't need the belly. Look at the
try.
Look at that woman, the Black Widow. See, it's this tiny woman. Somehow she wins these hot dog contests.
I'm fascinated by those competitive eating contests. I am. That to me is like. It's just one of those disgusting things. And you know, my wife's like, why are you watching this? And I'm like, I can't not watch it. What are you talking about? I cannot look away. I just have to keep, I mean, how, and you're right. Because it's always like these, you know, little like stick skinny toothpicks are like 5'3", 5'4", and they're eating their body weight in processed meats. And it's amazing. I'm actually more impressed by somebody who can put away, you know, 22 hot dogs than by somebody who can hit a 450, a foot home run. That to me is a more impressive feat. Now, if you can eat 22 hot dogs and then hit a 450 foot home run, that's even more amazing. I think I just figured out a way to make the All-Star game even better, Cameron. Can you imagine the Home Run Derby slash hot dog eating contest?
It is here in D.C. this year. You could easily make it.
Well, I have to do half smokes in D.C.
Oh, that's true. Right. Well, there's a bench chili bowl right in the stadium. You just go pick them up there and go right to the field.
You're welcome, Major League Baseball. You're welcome. Just full of these good ideas. So I would love to hear from you. What does your town do on Independence Day? Do you have the fireworks on Independence Day like most towns around the country, or are you weird like Farmville and you have yours on the 3rd? Do you have the parade? What do you do? What does your community do to celebrate Independence Day? You can tweet us at Cam and Company, or you can tweet us at Cam Edwards on Twitter as well. And again, we would love to hear from you this afternoon. Now, we are following some news this afternoon, including news out of Washington State, where signature gatherers say that they have got more than 350,000 signatures to put a gun control measure before voters in November. We saw last week, Oregon, there were two gun control measures that advocates wanted to get on the ballot. And in both cases, those advocates said, we just don't have the time to collect the signatures, so we're going to try again in a couple of years. Well, the Alliance for Gun Responsibility says it has about 360,000 signatures to turn in this week to get its proposed, quote, firearms safety initiative on the ballot in November. They have to turn in valid signatures of at least 259,622 registered voters by Friday. Talman Trask, who's the communications manager for the anti-gun group, says they've easily met that, quote, we're happy with where we've landed on the numbers. So this is initiative 1639 in Washington State. It's got the backing of billionaires like Paul Allen, who has been very instrumental in pushing gun control measures in Washington State over the last couple of years. 2014, 2016, they had gun control initiatives on the ballot as well. This year, initiative 1639 would raise the age to purchase a semi-automatic firearm to 21. It would also require, quote, enhanced background checks, as well as required training and waiting periods to obtain said firearms. The initiative, according to the Seattle Times, would also require gun owners to secure any firearms kept in their home, gun owners facing misdemeanor or perhaps even felony charges if they allow someone prohibited from obtaining a firearm access to their firearm. Now, the language here, very similar to what we've seen in other states, basically mandating unless the firearm is on your person or, quote, under your control, then that firearm has to be locked up. One of the questions, and the gun control advocates can't answer this question because they don't know, but one of the big questions is, what does it mean to have a firearm under your control? Los Angeles, California was the first city to actually implement a local version of this language that gun control advocates have now taken and have pushed all around the country. And I remember talking with Chuck Michelle, head of the California Rifle and Pistol Association, at the time when Los Angeles was debating this ordinance. One of the questions that he raised was, okay, so it says in this ordinance, got to keep it locked up unless it's on your person or under your control. Well, what if, for example, you're sleeping? What if you're sleeping and you have a firearm in your bedside table? Is that under your control or not? I don't really know. That was the answer from the city attorney. What if you're in the shower? You expected to actually have that firearm in a holster on your body while you're showering? Can you have it in the other room? Do you have to have it in the bathroom with you? What does that phrase mean? And unfortunately, the phrase means whatever a prosecutor wants it to mean. Now, the real question is, does this violate the Second Amendment and your right to keep and bear arms for self-defense? In the Heller case 10 years ago, the U.S. Supreme Court struck down Washington, D.C.'s storage requirements. Not only did they strike down the handgun ban, but they struck down the storage requirements that the city had set up. And those storage requirements required legal gun owners, those who had bought and registered their handguns before the gun ban went into effect in 1977, they had to keep their firearms locked up at all times, disassembled, ammunition stored separately. So there's no way that they could use that firearm in self-defense if they needed to. This was brought up by Justice John Roberts at the oral arguments for the Heller decision, wondering, okay, well, how is this supposed to work here? Do you just ask the guy coming in your house to just wait a couple seconds while you get your firearm ready to use for self-defense? You can't do that. If the core purpose of the right to keep and bear arms is self-defense, and you're requiring to keep people away from their firearms so they can't use them in self-defense, you're violating their rights. So the gun control advocates think that they found this little wiggle room here. We can require you to keep your guns locked up under lock and key at all times, unless, again, it's on you, so you can use it for self-defense, or it's under your control. But again, the devil is in the details here. And we are also seeing in Washington State gun owners asking the high court in Washington State to step in. Second Amendment Foundation and other groups last Friday asking the state Supreme Court to take a look at the initiative question itself and the petitions that they've been using to get signatures, because these gun owners say, look, people have been signing their name to this, but it doesn't really explain all of the changes that are going to occur in Washington state law if, in fact, this initiative passes. So the Washington State Supreme Court likely to weigh in at some point. The anti-gun groups pushing this say, quote, the gun lobby knows how much support there is for measures to prevent gun violence in our state and that they can't win at the ballot. They're desperately trying to prevent a vote on a popular measure. Well, first of all, let's talk about these measures to, quote unquote, prevent gun violence in the state of Washington, because one of the measures that this same group passed a couple of years ago was the quote unquote universal background check bill. And it did pass, and it's now law in Washington state, and it hasn't done a thing to reduce violent crime. In fact, I can only find one instance of anybody in Washington state being charged with violating this law since the law went into effect. Meanwhile, Garen Wintemute, we talked about this on the show yesterday, anti-gun researcher at University of California, Davis, he looked at Washington state's quote-unquote universal background check law to see if it was working, to see if it led to increased background checks. And what he found was, no, it did not. It didn't. There was no increase in the number of background checks performed after Washington state put its law on the books. So it's not being used because we've got one prosecution, and it's not actually being followed by apparently gun owners in Washington state. So what exactly is the point of this? What is the point of this law? And what is the point of this proposal that they're putting on the ballot back in before voters in November? Is it to reduce violent crime? Is this a measure that is aimed at violent criminals? Does this increase the penalty for using a stolen firearm in the commission of a violent crime, for example? Does it add on another 5 years behind bars? No, it does not. No, it does not. Does it possibly put legal gun owners at risk by requiring them to store their firearms in a way that they would not be readily accessible for self-defense? You can make that case. Again, it's going to depend on what a prosecutor judges and decides, quote, under your control means. And in Seattle, I'm guessing the prosecutor is going to rule that the definition of under your control means it's on your person, it's within your reach, and if it's and you've got to be awake and cognizant, otherwise how can something be under your control if you're asleep? So, no. You are required to keep your firearm locked up in such a way that it is not going to be immediately accessible to you unless you're carrying it on your person at all times. That's it. It is another proposal aimed squarely at legal gun owners in Washington state as opposed to violent criminals. All right, we got to take a timeout. When we come back, Stacey Washington joins us from Stacey on the Right. Jen Jakes later in the hour as well. Stick around. We have much more Cam and Company on the way right after this. So it was over the weekend. Giants were in town. And across the street from the baseball stadium, there was a little girl, 8 years old, who was selling water, trying to raise money for a trip to Disney World. Mom had been laid off recently. So the little girl's just out there trying to raise some money. And apparently a neighbor of the 8-year-old
came downstairs and was a little incensed that the 8-year-old was yelling, making noise, hawking the water, and decided to call police and inquire whether it was legal for her to do so, to sell that water without a permit. Yeah, I know. Didn't go well for Allison Attell, who was the now been dubbed Permit Patty, for calling police selling water. You know, it's been a while. I mean, we've seen we've obviously had, like, you know, Country Time Lemonade say that they're going to step in and pay the legal bills of any kid who shut down with their lemonade stand. I don't know. I mean, this is water. So do we know, Cameron, is like Aquafina? Have they gotten involved? Have they stepped up to say anything about what it is that they're doing?
I think I saw
Dasani. No.
I think I saw that James Woods offered to pay her trip to Disney, and I'm sure a lot of other people on both sides of the aisle will support this, because what happened was just insane, and people should just stop calling the cops on people, please. It's really kind of, I mean, unless it's a real crime, a kid selling something, come on, leave the kid alone. We should be promoting capitalism and kids getting it, just being outside.
I mean, here's the thing. You could probably go a block in a direction, and there are people who are selling heroin, right? Right. In San Francisco.
But, probably, you know, next to the kid.
Water. You know, and so here's what's even more ironic to me, is that the woman who called the police, there's an 8-year-old selling water, and I'm not sure that she's got a permit. Allison Attell is the founder of a company called Treatwell Health, which is a cannabis tincture company. Apparently they sell cannabis tinctures for pets. Right. I don't know if this is to get your dog high, if this is, you know, medical marijuana. I don't know. But it just struck me as odd and a little ironic that a person who makes a living selling a product which is still banned under federal law is calling the police to inquire about the legality of the 8-year-old selling water on the street there. Like, to me, if anybody's going to have that, you know, live and let live mentality, one would think it would be the person selling cannabis tinctures for dogs, but apparently not. Not in San Francisco. Apparently not. That's, yeah. So, it has not worked out well for Allison Attell there. She was on the Today Show earlier today. Saying she's really sorry. She wanted to apologize, but mom and the little girl don't want to accept her apology. And I don't know how sincere any of all of this is when you're seeing your business now being pulled out of dispensaries in the Bay Area, and that's your livelihood. Maybe all of a sudden now you're a little cognizant of what it was that you were doing. But here's the thing. Here's what just boggles my mind. Look, I live on a farm. Okay, I live out in the middle of nowhere. Why? One reason, because I like my peace and quiet. If I lived in San Francisco, right across from where the Giants play baseball, and it's a Sunday afternoon or a Sunday morning, I wouldn't be thinking, oh, it's so loud here. I just wish everybody would shut up. I mean, like, at that point, you've just got to deal with it, right? You've got to accept, I live in the city. There's a baseball game across the street. It's a beautiful day. We've got people outside. There's going to be noise. And if it's too loud, I can close my window and I can turn on my air conditioning, because this is 21st century San Francisco, and it's amazing the technology we have available to us. But no, rather than take that little step of, oh, it's really loud, I should go shut the window. Oh, it's really loud, I should call the police, see if there's something to be done about that little girl selling water downstairs. I just don't get it. I don't get it. But now I understand what they mean about leaving your heart in San Francisco. Although apparently, I guess this woman left it somewhere else, because she was heartless in San Francisco. So I don't know. There's some heart floating around the Bay Area right now. San Jose, Santa Cruz, I don't know where it is. But it's clearly not there in Allison Attell's neighborhood. Welcome back to Cam and Company here on NRA TV. Cam Edwards, your host. During the break, just flashing back to Permit Patty there in San Francisco, chastising that kid for selling water. We've got more news out of San Francisco. Stacey Washington from Stacey on the Right is joining us on the program right now. Stacey, how are you?
Doing great. How are you?
I am fantastic. Happy day before Independence Day to you.
It's Independence Week for me. I have been wearing red, white, and blue dresses, and, you know, I'm turning it up. It's the 4th, the week of the 4th, birthday of our country. I always celebrate big.
So I got to ask, how does your family celebrate? This is sort of the question of the day here on Cam and Company. Does your town do anything special? Do you have any special traditions on Independence Day?
Well, St. Louis has something called Fair St. Louis, where it's 4 days of god-awful heat, and you go downtown by the arch, and there's fireworks, and there's an air show, and there's a whole bunch of stuff that you can go and do. But we usually don't go do that. We usually stay home, we barbecue, we swim in our pool, and I just get kind of crazy about America, so we stick a whole bunch of flags out, and we just have a lot of fun and relaxation. And I wear a lot of red, white, and blue, and I encourage the kids to wear their flag T-shirts and all that stuff.
Fantastic. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing maybe some pictures on the Twitter feed, and I'm with you. My wife's favorite holiday besides Christmas is Halloween, and this is my Halloween. That's the joke. Like, every year she always wants to go big and decorate the house, and every year she has to chastise me before I go off to the fireworks stand. Like, you know, don't buy everything. Don't take out a second mortgage to buy the fireworks. So, okay.
Yeah,
so
my husband with you. Buys the fireworks. He goes with the kids. They go and buy those, and I stay home and I do the menu, the cooking, all that stuff. And they come back with like a trunk full of stuff, and I always yell about how much it costs. And then when we start shooting it off, I'm like, oh, I'm so glad you got all this stuff. This happens every year without fail.
Right. Now, does your husband wait until the 4th of July to go fireworks shopping?
Well, it depends. So like this year, it's weird because the 4th of July is on a Wednesday, you know, so he usually will go like today. They're going today. But previous to that, he would go on a Sunday, like Sunday afternoon, and he would go and buy them. So kind of weird this year.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, listen, the longer you wait, the better deals you get. I mean, so think of the money. Don't think of the money that he spent, Stacey. Think of the money that he saved.
I just always have the same reaction. I'm always like, look how much stuff you guys got. I'm always like, look at it. Look at all this stuff. And the kids are like, look, Mom, have you ever seen this before? Have you ever seen this before? This one's like an explosion. I'm like, okay. And then the night of, when we're actually shooting this stuff off and drinking tea and all that, I'm like, oh, wow, these are really great. They're like, we told you, Mom. We told you this is going to be awesome. I'm like, okay.
Exactly. So listen, we were just talking about San Francisco during that last break, and I saw two stories yesterday out of San Francisco. Stacey, you may have seen one or both of these. First, and I think they're related. First, there's the 20-pound bag of human poop that was found in the streets of San Francisco. Did you see that story?
I actually stopped checking on the human waste stories when I learned that, because we went to San Francisco. I think we talked about this on your show. Some years ago, my husband had a work trip to San Francisco, and me and the kids tagged along because I'd never been to California. The kids had never been to California. So we traveled to San Francisco, and we were stunned by, number one, it is beautiful there. And the natural beauty there of the redwood forest and all that, like, it's just outstanding. But we were also stunned by the absolute loquaciousness of the homeless folks there. They were like PhD people begging for money. And so not in a way that you would expect. They were almost pushy and rude about it, and they like to sneer the kids in and tell the kids stories and then look at us as if to say, if you want your kid back, you need to give us some money. So I remember talking to you about that, and we laughed. And then I started reading the stories about the syringes and the needles and the hepatitis B outbreaks there and the human feces that's really like a part of average, everyday San Francisco living. And I kind of checked out.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So, okay. Well, since you missed it, they found a 20-pound bag of human poop on the streets of San Francisco. That's basically the whole story. And I saw that courtesy of Cameron Gray, who is Cameron. You're still on the San Francisco poop street beat, right?
Yeah, I'm taking over for Stacey. You know, picking up her slack.
Thank you, Cameron.
I'll do twice the work. 40-pound stories, no problem.
Well, the other story that I think is related to this is there was a there's a convention that apparently backed out of San Francisco. It's some sort of medical association. The city isn't saying who it was, but it was a bunch of doctors. And basically, their fear for their safety said, they said, we don't want to go to San Francisco. Don't make us go to San Francisco. And so this convention is now being yanked out of San Francisco. You've got the Tourism Bureau that's starting to speak up about this, saying, hey, you know what? Could we really do something about the poop in the streets and the needles and everything and the crime? Because
we're driving people away. And I just, I find that amazing, Stacey, that, you know, there's so little discussion about this because California is seen as the great progressive bastion of freedom and tolerance and progressivism. And then you actually look at what's actually happening and you've got people who are, you know, refusing to go to a fun convention because they're afraid to go to San Francisco.
Well, dare I say that there's a reason why a few years ago the Unicode people introduced that poo emoji and we were all wondering why it had a smile on its face, maybe because it's coming close to a place near us starting with San Francisco. I gotta say, for me, the thing about California that's so weird is that there's this stunning natural beauty. It's the breadbasket of the United States. And in a lot of ways, because of its GDP and the way that everyone there is so kind of happy-go-lucky, it's like this utopia, but it's also a utopia of liberalism, which means that everything that any liberal has ever thought about implementing anywhere has already been implemented in California. And so we see the overgrowth of illegal immigration and their government's outsized, and they've never had a balanced budget. I mean, not since I've been a grown-up. And it's just been really every experiment you've ever thought of, they're doing it and it's not working. And so the liberals just don't talk about it, kind of like how they don't talk about Venezuela and socialism. And I find it interesting because all you have to do is bring it up and they'll say, it's not true. More people are not leaving California than are moving in. And then you point to the numbers and they're like, well, that's not true. Well, they'll probably be saying that about the poop next, that the poop stories are not true.
Yeah, you're right. They probably will be saying that. But dad joke incoming, Stacey. The proof is in the pudding. Sorry. That was awful. Oh, Cameron wishes that he was here in person. You can just give me a wrist slap for that one. I apologize. I really do. That was bad. It is going to be interesting to see where this goes. You know, I saw there was on Twitter yesterday with the rise of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. As the new face of the Democratic Party, the Democratic Socialist face of the party, there was a fellow on Twitter who was tweeting out what it is the Democratic Socialists want. And they want free stuff, as far as I can tell, Stacey. They want a guaranteed job. They want free health care. They want free college, free textbooks, guaranteed housing, and then free Wi-Fi. I mean, there was a long list of free stuff. And I just started thinking to myself, you know, they're not going to stop wanting this, right? They're going to keep wanting it. So let's try an experiment. Like Richard Branson says that the rich people need to start giving their money away to poor people. I think we should turn California into an experiment, and we should just do like a 5-year experiment because the socialists, they love 5-year plans. So we could have this 5-year plan where you could, you know, voluntarily sign up in California. You get all this free stuff, but in return, you know, you are basically a ward of the state at that point. And let's see how many people are willing to re-sign in another 5 years when they get the opportunity to do so.
And I would take it a step further, that if you decide to sign up for the program, you get the free stuff, you're a ward of the state, you have to live in California and you cannot leave. You cannot vacation because, you know, California is a vacation capital of the world, really. A lot of people travel from China to California to see the natural beauty and the wonders. So you would be signing up for 5 years. You would live in California for 5 years. You would not be permitted to travel outside the state of California for any reason. And people could go in and visit you, but you could not come out. In exchange for that, you get all of the universal health care, government funded, everything. Whatever it is that you're looking for, you get it. I guarantee you they wouldn't last 3 years. And the reason is because government funded stuff like the post office and all of that, with no competition, the stuff is garbage. I mean, look at the VA medical system. It only works well for a very few. Everyone else is very dissatisfied with it. And that's because it's run on a model that's failed. So, you know, on all of these different metrics, Cam, I think they'd be not just begging, but dying and suing. They'd be filing lawsuits to get out of California. And that's what so many people are doing. They're moving to free states like Wyoming and Texas. You know, they're even moving to Tennessee, which has no property tax no personal income tax. So, I mean, it's already been tried. But my thing about the Democratic Socialists of America is that they're very, very, very effective in their marketing. They've actually been offering what they call as a plan to pay off students' college loans. And that's how they lure people in. So there used to be barely 8,000 of them. Now their numbers are well over 25,000, and they have 100 new chapters that opened across the country last year. So the Democratic Socialists of America are the new Democratic Party, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer just don't know it yet. The thing they've been wishing for, they've been dancing and kind of slow jamming with socialism. Now socialism is twerking them, and they want it to stop, and they're not going to be able to.
I just have this mental image of Leon Trotsky backing it up. Anyway, Stacey, on that mental image, we will once again wish you a happy Independence Day. And thank you so much for being a part of the program. Look forward to doing this again very, very soon.
That was my mom joke for you.
Stacey Washington from Stacey on the Right on Twitter at Stacey on the Right. Here on Cam and Company, I promise I'll get all the dad jokes out of my system here during the next commercial break. Jen Jakes of JenJakes.com, the truth about gun violence in America, her latest at the truth about guns. We'll talk with Jen coming up right after this, and we will find out from you what's going on in your community. How does your town celebrate Independence Day? We've got some tweets coming in from all around the country at Cam Edwards or at Cam and Company. Tell us how you're going to be celebrating tomorrow. Stick around. We've got much more Cam and Company coming up next.
One Million Moms Against Gun Control. What's your organization all about? But I think it's right there in the title. You're against gun control. So let me just go down the line and ask you, why do you belong to this organization? Why are you a part of 1 Million Moms Against Gun Control, Mary?
Right after Newtown, when Shannon Watts came out as, you know, 1 Million Moms for gun control, I'm like, wait a minute, wait, you know, looking online, I needed to, you know, to go with the guns. I'm like, we're not against guns. I need guns to protect my family, and came across this organization and joined that because I'm like, she's not going to speak for me, and she's not going to speak for my fellow moms that are, you know, for guns and the value that they hold as a tool to defend my family and myself if something bad were to happen. So I'm like, nope. We got to join this organization. We got to get involved and do something about it.
That's awesome. What about you, Melissa?
Well, I tag along with them, sharing my story of what I've been through, what I survived through, and supporting them. We, you know, we've grown up around guns our whole life, and just never being afraid, but also educating people on the importance of them as well.
Yeah.
And not letting, you know, not telling them that they're a bad thing. And she's given me more education, you know, growing up and just even now after everything that I've been through and, you know, how important things are. So I tag along. They kind of, you know, give me out to people.
And share how important it is as a personal thing to see what she went through. And this is why we encourage women to carry, because her story is so powerful, you know, in your own home to get attacked. No one ever thinks they're going to attack in the safest place, and that's why you need a gun for protection. You know, her story is literally why we do this now, you know, even more passionate about it.
You know, when you walk into a house where you were stabbed 17 times, where you were beaten within an inch of your life, you know, and it's a hard thing to swallow, but I have continued to make myself stronger through it all and educate people. I speak in high schools to young women. I speak to ladies all over. I have people that contact me from across the country, and it becomes a very empowering thing, especially for a woman. There's a lot of women out there that we've had these conversations when it comes to getting your concealed carry,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes they feel intimidated being with men and going and doing that. But I try to share with people that just because you're a woman doesn't mean you can't be empowered, doesn't mean you can't be something awesome. So after my attack, I've continued to do this. I still deal with a lot of things, but, you know, coming here, doing this, talking to different people, it helps.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you're here.
Well, thank you.
And I want to ask you some more questions, but I also I don't want to neglect Shannon and Rebecca. So, Shannon, how did you get involved in the organization?
Yeah, really, it was an accidental thing. Scrolling through Facebook, saw another friend of mine that I was friends with on Facebook had, like, the page. So I looked into it, and I said, that's for me. That is absolutely for me. I have a young son. He's 7 years old. And so at that time, after Newton happened, I was a stay-at-home mom. So I was going out doing errands with him and stuff. And I realized this is something that I really need to advocate for, because I don't want to be out with him knowing I can't do a thing to protect him at all.
Yeah.
And at home. And I'm alone at home a lot with my son. So I want to make sure that all women are able to effectively protect themselves and feel empowered enough to be able to do so.
And Rebecca, what about you?
Generally speaking, I have been around guns my entire life. I hunt and I do all the things that a girl from Kansas does. So you go out and you target practice and things like that. When I had children of my own, I really started to understand what it means to be responsible for the protection of someone that is defenseless. Mm-hmm. When Shannon Watts came out and started saying that she spoke for all mothers, I knew that she didn't speak for me. And I knew that she didn't speak for a great many of us. It is very important to me because I need all of us and our children to have a voice. The attack on our individual liberty, not just guns for sports, guns for hunting, but just the attack on individual liberty is incessant, and we have to stand together. We have to speak out. And being moms, we're the ones that are most often with our children. If they are going to learn about their rights, they need to learn it at home from us.
Welcome back to Cam and Company, right here on NRA TV, heading into the Independence Day holiday. We want to know from you, how does your town celebrate this? From B. Dunbar on Twitter, 8 million people go downtown to watch fireworks and music. Hard pass, hashtag Nashville, July the 4th. All right, well, so that's not how you're celebrating, right? Julie Gunlock, who will join us well, next week, because she's at the beach on vacation. She says she celebrates with booze. Also, chiming in on Twitter as well. Mike Colovian on Twitter says, we do fireworks in Manchester, Michigan. There tonight, in fact. Okay, another town, just like Farmville, that does its fireworks on July the 3rd for some reason. We don't do a parade, says Mike, though the fair is next week, and there's a parade for that. Can't have two parades in 2 weeks. And then the next week after the fair is the world-famous Manchester, Michigan chicken broil. I actually have a mug from the world-famous Manchester, Michigan chicken broil, courtesy of Mike in Manchester. Mike, thank you, sir, and happy Independence Day to you. Want to welcome right now our friend Jen Jakes is with us on the program. Jen, how are you this afternoon?
Boil, apparently. I want some.
Get thee to Manchester, Michigan, I suppose, right?
Well, Appleton, Wisconsin has their fireworks tonight, and Green Bay has their big festival foods fireworks. So tomorrow night, so I'm actually taking the girls tonight down to Appleton and then tomorrow night to Green Bay. So we get a twofer.
Nice. The fireworks in Farmville have been rained out on July 3rd, like the last 3 years in a row. So I'm kind of tempted. It's also going to be like 90 something degrees, probably even at 9 o'clock at night. I don't know. I don't know if we'll actually make it out to the Farmville fireworks, but we did go to the fireworks stand this weekend. So. We'll have stuff to celebrate with tomorrow.
Are you going to blow up the watermelon or?
You know, I prefer to eat the watermelon as opposed to, you know, blow up perfectly good fruit. But,
exactly.
You know, there'll be a lot of sounds and whistles and all kinds of fireworks. So I appreciate you coming on the program here the day before Independence Day, and a great, great write up at the Truth About Guns, the Truth About Gun Violence in America. And as you say, look, nobody wants gun violence to perpetrate in America. So in order to eradicate it, you say, we have to address the facts head on. And when you address the facts, Jen, what you find out is that, as you say, there are politics entrenched in America's deadliest cities. And it is not the politics of libertarianism or the politics of conservatism. It is the politics of progressivism.
Right. And, you know, I'm guilty of having said this throughout my life and career, that the worst cities for gun violence are run by Democrats. But you know what? When this Major Cities Chiefs Association Violence Crime Survey came out, I said, you know what? I'm really going to dig in and actually look up every single city on that list. And I'm going to look to see who is in charge, who is the mayor, where are the politics lying in terms of gun control. And like you said, it's not surprising. 90% of the top 20 deadliest American cities are run by Democrats, and 100% of the top 10 deadliest cities are run by Democrats. 100%. That's Very telling, don't you think?
It is. Now, okay, so the automatic knee-jerk response says, yeah, but, Jen, just shows the reason for and the need for federal gun control laws, because these hardworking, good-hearted Democrats who are, you know, leading these cities, they can't do it by themselves. They need help from Congress, and Congress won't act. And so all the local gun control laws in the world, all the state gun control laws in the world don't amount to a hill of beans if we don't have those federal gun control laws on the books, too.
Right, but they do. So either these mayors have enacted strict gun control laws and saw the dismal effect that they've had on crime in their cities, like Chicago, or they already know that limiting law-abiding citizens' right to bear arms does nothing to stop the bad guys who habitually ignore the law, whether state or federal, so they never bothered enacting any new gun laws. But either way, these cities prove that Democrats who love to wail and moan and gnash their teeth at the NRA and Republicans are really just feckless puppets for the gun control agenda. They can regurgitate as many catchy sound bites for every town and Moms Demand Action as they want. When it comes right down to it, their own report cards prove that gun control doesn't make the grade, period.
I'm curious, Jen, what kind of response, if any, that you can say on Family Friendly Radio have you received from gun control advocates to your piece?
Well, thank you to the NRA for quoting this tweet, because I woke up this morning and went, what happened to my timeline? I've gotten a lot of very interesting responses. I have one guy kind of going off on how when we buy a car, we have to prove that we have a driver's license and insurance and all these other things. And it should be the same, because places like Chicago, it's too easy to go into Indiana to buy a gun. And I'm like, okay. Apples and oranges, my friend. Apples and oranges. So in Chicago, to own a gun, you have to have a what?
Firearm owner ID card.
Yes. Can you go to Indiana and buy a gun?
Not a handgun.
No. But, okay, let's say you go somewhere else and you buy it. Let's say, okay, the ownership is still on you to follow the law.
Yes.
Period. It's still on you.
Absolutely.
It has nothing to do with, and that's what it comes down to. It's personal ownership for your actions. Criminals don't follow laws. Hi, that's what makes them criminals.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that simple. You can make 1,000 more laws, or better yet, you can enforce the laws that are already on the books. That's what I would prefer. Enforce the laws that are already on the books. Then come back and tell me that we need more laws, if we do.
You know, and it's interesting, because this is something I pointed out yesterday when we were talking about universal background checks. Alyssa Milano going after the NRA and Dana Loesch and talking about it.
Right.
You guys should oppose universal background checks. And you're right, Jenna. This is something that the gun control advocates, look, they will talk incessantly about the need to put more laws on the books. But all of these laws, again, they're aimed at legal, law-abiding gun owners. They don't want to talk about the individual responsibility of the violent criminal. They don't.
Of course not. And they certainly don't want to talk about how when we look at recidivism rates and what is and is not working in the criminal justice system, address that, how insanely broken that system is. How many times have we seen these felons and career criminals, they just get a slap on the wrist. They're fine. But heaven forbid you get a gun owner, or God forbid an NRA member, who has to take a deadly shot because they felt their life was threatened. Man, oh man, we would just be crucified. And that's insane to me, that they will stand up for these criminals and yet they won't support their fellow law-abiding citizen for wanting to keep and bear arms. It's mind-boggling.
I my theory, and you know, if I could ever talk to Alyssa Milano, if I could ever have a conversation with Shanna Watts, I'd pose this question to them. But my theory is that they really believe, if we just make it impossible for people to legally own a gun, then eventually it'll be impossible for criminals to get a gun. And so, I agree. I don't think that's true at all. But I think that that's their line of thinking, is that, have to go after the legal guns first, and then it'll trickle down to those who illegally own a firearm.
Trickle down gun control.
Yeah.
That's a new hashtag.
God. but as you say, that doesn't work.
right? I mean, first of all, we live in a world, and we're reminded by this from the left all the time. We live in an increasingly smaller and more globalized world. So you now have Mexican drug cartels that are importing fentanyl in from China, and
right.
then are manufacturing methamphetamine using chemicals that they're getting from India, and then they're shipping this into the United States. You have fentanyl coming in directly from China into the United States right now through the U.S. Post Office, right? If there is an illicit market for something, there are going to be people who will do their damnedest to try to provide that to their customer base. And the criminals in this country, they're not going to give up their firearms. And if we ever did find a day in which legal gun ownership was banned, criminals still have access to those illicit markets. Guess what? They're going to start adding firearms to the mix of all of the other illicit things that they are already obtaining. I mean, heck, that's what they're doing right now, in large part, in terms of acquiring firearms. Firearms are acquired through theft. Exactly.
If criminals are going to get them now with all of the gun laws that we have on the books, just imagine how many fewer gun owners, law-abiding citizens, would be able to own a gun. With more, I mean, it's just insane. I mean, we're not carrying to hurt anyone. We're carrying to protect ourselves and our loved ones. That's the difference. You know, they like to look at these as weapons of destruction and death. Well, actually, they're weapons of salvation. It all depends in your point of view. My gun is not a weapon. My gun is a tool for salvation. It's either going to save me or my family. And that is the only reason I own it.
Talking again with Jen Jakes from JenJakes.com about what's going on in our nation's most violent cities. You know, here's the other thing, though, Jen. You look at a city like Baltimore, Maryland, murder capital of the United States right now. We're looking, this is probably going to be, 2018 is probably going to be the fourth year in a row with more than 300 homicides. You've had, I think, four police chiefs over the last 5 years. You have a dysfunctional city government. There is, I stand a better chance, Jen, of being named the next Miss America than anybody other than a Democrat running Baltimore. I mean, it's just it's not going to happen. So that's the other question is, how do you fix this?
Because that was the other thing that I looked up in my article on Truth About Guns, is how long have these cities been under Democrat rule? Or when was the last time they had a Republican mayor? And in Baltimore, it's been 51 years. In Memphis, it's been 142 years.
Wow.
So for the people on my timeline saying, well, those mayors do the best they can, and then the Republicans come in and they ruin all their good work, just like Trump with Obama. Okay, try again, sweetheart. New Orleans, 146 years. They have not had a Republican mayor in 146 years. That's insane. And they keep voting for the same thing over and over and over. And then they cry and wail and complain about gun violence. We have to do something. Well, try at the polls. Really and truly, change your city, change the leadership, change the narrative coming out of there. Look at the facts, grow up, and actually do something.
Talking again with our friend Jen Jakes of JenJakes.com. Jen, listen, we are almost out of time, but I appreciate you coming on the program this afternoon. Thank you for, again, an excellent story. Sorry about all of the trolls that you're getting there on Twitter, but enjoy the fireworks tonight in Appleton, Wisconsin.
I will, for sure. Thanks so much, and happy Independence Day.
Happy Independence Day to you, too. Jen Jakes with us here on Cam & Company. Make sure that you are following Jen online at Jen Jakes. Let's see. Ann Alexander 70 on Twitter says our town center usually has a big celebration. I think this year we'll try something in a more rural area. Ours is getting too crowded. LOL. Listen, you can't go wrong with rural areas. Also, let's see. L_Bohemio on Twitter says my neighbor and I will have enough firepower to supply a small army and multiple grills and smokers with enough meat to feed it. There will be noise. There will be smoke. There'll be dogs catching frisbees. The usual. Okay, that sounds amazing. Especially when you get the dogs catching frisbees. Do any of your dogs, Cameron, can they catch a frisbee? Just out of curiosity. Have you ever taught them that trick?
No. My dogs, I love my dogs, but they're the laziest dogs ever, and they can't do a single trick.
Okay, I don't feel so bad now.
Yeah.
I've gotten to the point where Zelda, if I throw the ball to Zelda, we haven't tried the frisbee yet. We haven't quite gotten frisbee level. I can throw the ball to Zelda. She'll track the ball. She'll go and she'll chase the ball. And then she will lie down next to the ball and eat the ball. And I'll come on. She knows how to come when she's called, but for whatever reason, if there's a ball involved, nah, she's cool. Just hanging out in the yard, 20 yards away from me. So we got to work on that. But El Bohemio, that sounds like an amazing way to celebrate Independence Day. Also, you have to find a tweet from Gabriel Malloy. He was talking about what they do in Fredericksburg, Virginia. So if you are in the D.C. area, Fredericksburg might not be a bad spot. Just because I think Gabriel Malloy said that they've got a classic car show. They've got fireworks on the Potomac River. There's a Navy band, a Navy country bluegrass ensemble that's going to be playing there in Fredericksburg tomorrow. 5 mile run. Forget that, unless there's somebody chasing me for 5 miles. A parade, a car show, a street festival, live music, and then fireworks over the river there in Fredericksburg, Virginia. That's how they do Independence Day. How do you do Independence Day? You can send us a tweet at Cam Edwards or at Cam and Company on Twitter. Stick around an hour or two. Andrew Langer, Jed Babbitt, and more. It's all on the way right after this.
I want to go back to what you talked about with the Constitution and what we are teaching and what we're not teaching. Because, you know, surrounding this gun control argument, it's not even really been a debate, but the argument over the last couple of months, I keep hearing, in fact, I saw it on my Twitter feed earlier today, one of these common talking points from anti-gun advocates is, well, listen, the Constitution's old, Lucretia. It was written in 1791, and founding fathers couldn't have envisioned what guns would look like. And by the way, back then, you know, that same Constitution, those same founding fathers, you talked about our freedom of speech and you talked about our right to keep your arms. They also said that you were 3/5 of a person, right?
Yeah.
And so why should we listen to the Constitution? Why should we hold this up as some sort of revered document when clearly it was written with flaws in it? We've changed, we've progressed, we've moved on past these things. Why can't we move past the Second Amendment, too?
Because our founding fathers were smarter than what we have in Washington today. It's like they had a crystal ball and they saw the tyranny that was going to happen 200 years later. So the only thing that is stopping us from losing our sovereignty, and the only thing stopping from Washington, D.C. from getting complete out control is the Bill of Rights, the Constitution of the United States. That's what's stopping them from taking us over from within. As long as we have the Constitution, we'll never be overtaken.
You know, and I'm so glad to hear you say that, because you're absolutely right. The Constitution, when it was presented to the American people back in 1787, there were a lot of people who were skeptical about it. There were a lot of people who said, whoa, this gives the federal government way, way too much power. I don't know if I'm on board with this, which is why we have a Bill of Rights. There were enough states that said, we're not going to ratify the Constitution unless we get some guarantees here that our rights are going to be protected. And if you read the preamble to the Bill of Rights, which nobody ever does, it actually talks about why we've got the Bill of Rights in the first place. They say to ensure that the government could not take these liberties, that to reassure the American people that their rights were going to be respected. That's why we have the Bill of Rights. And it's not that the government said, hey, you know what, we're putting together this whole new document. Let's come up with some new rights for you, too. These were rights that Americans already possessed. These were rights that Americans did not want to lose. And what we have seen over the past 230-plus years is that the rights have been expanded to include all Americans. It's true that at the time of the founding of this nation, basically people like me were the only ones who really got to exercise their rights.
Mm-hmm.
White guys who own property, right?
Who cares? Black men that own property. One of the first slave owners was a black man. If we're going to talk about history, let's go tit for tat. You want to talk about all the evil in the world? Let's go back to Cain and Abel. Let's get serious. We live in the 21st century.
Mm-hmm.
We have a document that is a living, breathing document. Leave it alone. The first 12 amendments is the Bill of Rights. If you want to amend, you want to change it, then you go ahead and you amend it. But you're going to do it in order, in law, the way it's supposed to be. You're not going to get rid of the first 12 amendments. Let it go, because I will walk on Washington myself before I allow that to happen. I'm fighting for the next generation, and I could care less about what happened in the past, because we cannot go and change it.
Absolutely. Well, you know, and here's the thing, but we have changed the present, we have changed the future, and what we have seen over our U.S. history is that expansion of rights, that recognition of, all right, you know what, it's not just a right of white guys who own property. It's not just a right of people, of men who own property. These rights are rights of all Americans. And you know what? I think the country has become a better place, not a worse place as more and more of us have been able to exercise our rights as Americans. And it does concern me that we now have people who are fighting to take those rights away, who say that, well, you know what, no, we were better off when we didn't have these rights. We were better off when we were able to say, you know what, you get to exercise that right, but you don't get to exercise that right.
You're watching NRA TV with Cam Edwards.
Welcome back. Hour two of Cam and Company, fueled by Hornady. It starts right now here on NRA TV. Cam Edwards, your host. Glad that you have joined us today. Tuesday, July the 3rd, day before Independence Day, but perhaps in small towns across the country, the day when the fireworks celebrations begin. I'm wondering if that's because some of these smaller towns know on Independence Day, people are going to be driving to the bigger towns to see the bigger fireworks displays and say, all right, well, if we want to have anybody show up, we got to do it on July the 3rd. That's my working theory here. Heard just a moment ago from, let's see, I want to make sure I got this. Brooks_the_lab. Brooks the Labrador out in Utah says it's an all-day fun time in Murray, Utah. And this sounds amazing. This is an all-day extravaganza in Murray, Utah, starting with a sunrise service at 7 a.m. Actually starting at 6:30 in the morning. They got the Rotary Club Community Breakfast. $6 for adults, $4 for children 12 and under. Then you got the sunrise service at 7. There is a chalk art contest from 6 to 7 a.m. I don't know that I could do chalk art at 6 o'clock in the morning. Then there is a pickleball tournament from 7:30 in the morning to 6 in the evening. Do you know what pickleball is, Cameron?
Because
I don't.
Pickleball is it's a sport where they it's like tennis, from what I recall, but it's like a smaller court. And they play with paddles like right across from each other. I think it's like a smaller version of tennis.
Okay, kind of like ping pong without the table.
Yeah, like a bigger ping pong is the way I use it. It's huge at the villages.
Okay, badminton and wiffle ball is what Kyle Morgan just described this as. All right, so there you go. If you're a pickleball fan, you can take part in the pickleball tournament. Then there's a 5K and a kids race. Then there's a parade at 8:30 in the morning. Then you've got a custom and vintage car and bike show. You got food trucks, game booths, co-ed volleyball tournament. There's the ugliest duckling puppet show. There are storytellers. There's the Miss Murray royalty. And then in the evening, this is the only thing that kind of I don't quite get. Everything else sounds amazing. Fireworks at 10 o'clock at night in Murray, Utah. But at 8:30 in the evening, Cameron, they're having a band play. And the band on Independence Day in Murray, Utah is Imagine, a Beatles tribute band. Now, I'm just wondering, of all of the types of music
right.
that you could play and all of the bands you could bring in for Independence Day, I would think that this would be like the one day of the year that all the Beatles tribute bands are like, well, I guess we're off. But no. They actually found work there in Murray, Utah.
Not to mention, if you really want to dig deep, the lyrics to Imagine aren't the most July 4th Independence Day friendly lyrics either, if you want to go that route.
Yeah. See, I don't know. Maybe they'll be doing a John Philip Sousa medley there. I don't know. It sounds like an amazing day, and then the Beatles tribute, and then the fireworks. So, okay, just, you know, work with it, I suppose. I don't know that the British invasion is what I would necessarily go with on Independence Day, but yeah, your mileage may vary. All right, so we're taking a look at some of the other big stories around the country. We talked about what's going on in Washington State last hour with this ballot initiative that is getting closer to actually being on the ballot in November. Meanwhile, in Idaho, we've got a new law on the books right now going into effect July the 1st, Senate Bill 1313. This improves the ability of law-abiding citizens there in the state of Idaho to protect and defend themselves. It consolidated and codified existing law to protect the inherent right of a person to defend themselves, clarifying that in the exercise of self-defense, a law-abiding citizen may stand their ground and protect themselves or their family anywhere that they have a legal right to be. Now, this Senate Bill 1313, also protects the right of a person to defend themselves against intruders who enter the defender's home or business unlawfully or by force without the defender having to demonstrate that he reasonably feared that the intruder was about to cause death or great bodily harm.
Somebody's breaking into your home. They're not there to sell you Girl Scout cookies. The unlawful or forceful entry now enough to establish a legal presumption that the defender's fear of serious injury was reasonable, and therefore the defense against the criminal was reasonable as well. So that important piece of self-defense legislation going into effect in the state of Idaho, and that is very good news for Idaho residents as well. Meanwhile, not so good news for Democrats who are hoping to make a campaign issue out of immigration and customs enforcement this year. You have certainly seen the hashtag abolish ICE. You have seen the many celebrities calling for the abolishment of ICE. You have seen some Democratic senators calling for the abolition of ICE, including, well, not including because she's not a senator, but Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the Democratic candidate, the Democratic Socialist candidate for the New York's 14th Congressional District, the rising star, the meteoric rising star of the Democrats, calling for abolishing ICE. Well, there are some polls out about abolishing ICE. One from the Huffington Post and YouGov. Would you favor or oppose abolishing ICE? 21% of those surveyed said, yes, I would favor abolishing ICE. 44%, according to the Huffington Post YouGov poll, say, no, not interested. And then a lot of people say, I don't know what you're talking about. And that's actually the better of some recent polls on this issue here. Harvard and Harris poll asked this very same question. 75% of those responding, 75% of Republicans responding said, no, let's keep ICE. More than 50% of Democrats said, no, let's keep ICE. 41% of Democrats say, let's disband ICE. 59% of Democrats polled say, let's keep ICE. Among independents, 73% in the Harvard-Harris poll say, no, let's not disband it. 27% say, yes, let's disband it. And this is, they're kind of locked into this position right now. I mean, not only are they kind of locked into this position, but they're escalating this. In Nebraska, Daily Caller reports that a brick was thrown through the window of the Nebraska Republican Party, party headquarters, and left outside, spray painted on the ground in front of the Nebraska Republican Party headquarters. That's right. Abolish ICE. Because that's apparently what they do. Throw bricks through windows. In Philadelphia, Channel 3 in Philly, the CBS affiliate reporting today, protests turned violent as activists were taken into custody on the streets of Philadelphia as they were calling for the abolishment of U.S. Customs and Immigration Enforcement. The protests taking place in front of the ICE office on 8th and Cherry Streets in downtown Philadelphia. Police and activists clashing while officers were clearing an encampment outside of the ICE building on Tuesday afternoon. CBS3's Alicia Nieves reported the scene turned, quote, chaotic and aggressive. One guess as to where the aggressiveness was coming from. CBS3 says protesters have been out since Monday afternoon. Organizer says they have donations of cold water and food coming in constantly because the goal is to be out in front of ICE's office indefinitely until, quote, certain demands are met. Demands. On a national level, CBS3 reports, they are calling for an end to, quote, mass deportations and to abolish ICE. Yeah. CBS3 says there is a new movement. This is a new movement that has sprung up saying the agency has gone rogue and needs to be replaced. Now here's... I disagree with this line from CBS3's report. Quote, there is growing support in Congress for this and also growing criticism. I suppose you say there's growing support in Congress because you got people like, you know, Christian Gillibrand now who are signing on to this. There are senators who I think are now speaking up because of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, because they see where that political energy is among their base. I don't know that they really support it. I think a lot of them feel like they have to say this because they're trying. That's what you have to say if you want to try to get your base to turn out on the left in November. Protester Anling Wang
said, despite Philadelphia's reputation as a sanctuary city, it is the case that Philadelphia also has one of the most active ICE offices in the country. Part of the reason for that is that they're able to access the city's residential data. And so they want the city of Philadelphia to do more, even though the city of Philadelphia has declared itself to be a sanctuary city. They want to do more to impede ICE's ability to uphold the law. And meanwhile, you've got stories. I think it was New York yesterday. ICE ended up making arrests of, I think, 28 individuals on sex trafficking charges, which never gets brought up, by the way, right? I'm sure there are other law enforcement agencies that can pick up that sort of slack. But, you know, it's interesting. I mean, much like we were talking with Jen Jakes about this last hour, you start talking to a gun control advocate about gun control, or even you don't even have to talk with them. You just listen. And they're full of all of these proposals, all aimed, again, at legal law-abiding gun owners. They don't really want to talk about the penalties for violating these laws. It's simply enough to put these laws on the books, and then magically they'll be followed. Right? They don't want to talk about the consequences here. What are the consequences of abolishing ICE? Because what you have right now is basically a slogan, abolish ICE. And you'll hear individuals like Senator Gillibrand say on occasion, we're not talking about getting rid of law enforcement at the border entirely, but we're just talking about replacing ICE with something better. Well, what exactly would change between the current agency that we have and the new agency that you want to establish? They can't really say. They don't really know, because it's less of a fully fleshed out policy position than it is a hashtag. And it's a hashtag that most Americans disagree with. And so until they start trying to flesh out this policy, and I think even if they do try to start fleshing out this policy, it's not really going to end well as a campaign issue for Democrats. There was a new poll out. Our friend Ed Morrissey at Hot Air pointed out, I think this was a CNN poll, showing President Trump's approval rating right now at the highest since he's been in office. 48% approve, 50% disapprove. And the Democrat advantage on the generic congressional ballot for the midterms is down to 3 points. Yeah, plus three. Last poll that was done for this outfit, it was a Dems plus seven. So their advantage has been cut in half, just in a matter of weeks here. I don't think this is going to end well for the Democrats as a campaign issue. But I also don't see how they back away from this. They're kind of locked in as a campaign issue. In fact, not only are they locked in, there's really only one way that they can keep going, right? They can they're only going to escalate this type of rhetoric, even in the face of mounting opposition among the American people. So we'll keep our eyes on that story coming up in the days and weeks ahead. Now, we're going to talk with Andrew Langer here in just a moment or two about some of the big stories of the day, including a call by the Baltimore Sun for more gun control in Maryland. I can't really say what gun control they want, but in the wake of this horrific shooting, five journalists killed at the Capital Gazette newspaper offices in Annapolis, Maryland, by an individual who was known to law enforcement, was known to newspaper staffers for years and years, an individual who was originally charged with a felony stalking offense, who was allowed to plead guilty to a misdemeanor harassment charge, an individual who was on the radar of police, but no additional charges were ever filed, despite the conversations and the difficult decisions by some of these newspaper staffers not to pursue legal charges. This guy was able to illegally purchase a pump-action shotgun and used it to murder five individuals in cold blood. And if you live in Maryland and you are a gun control advocate, that means that there must be some sort of gun control law that we can put on the books to address this, even if they can't tell you specifically what it is. Now,
Will there be any discussion whatsoever about, I don't know, the ability to protect yourself in Maryland? Right now in Maryland, you have to be able to show some sort of specific ongoing threat against your life in order for you to obtain a concealed carry license. Is this likely to prompt any discussion whatsoever about the human right of self-defense denied to so many Maryland residents? Probably not, honestly, but we'll talk about it with Andrew Langer coming up right after this. Stick around.
You've got a brand new book, and our friend Frank Minniter helped put this book together with you, right?
That's right. He was instrumental. Couldn't have done it without him.
Conquer Anything, A Green Beret's Guide to Building Your A-Team. Now, I made a B.A. Baracus joke as we were going into the break, but you're really serious. I mean, talk about the concept of your A-Team, because I know that this is something that's really important to you.
Well, as you know, I spent my career in the Army Special Forces, and as a Green Beret, you learn the dynamics of great teamwork. And it has to get you through very serious environments, very serious execution plans. What I've found is that as tough as that is, and as much as you get tested through the course of military service and conflict in those environments, you can break that down and make it less of a military thing than it is a human thing. And we all share these characteristics. We can all have these team dynamics. The ways that it works are available to all of us. And so it was my goal to demystify some of the awesomeness in the movies.
Yeah.
And break it down where people can go to work in their own lives, in your home. Your A-team may have a dog on it. You know, your A-team's under your roof, or it can be a softball team on the weekend.
Right.
But building a team is only important when you want to succeed, right?
Absolutely. And again, those A-teams, they're wonderful to have around every day, but we all have those times of challenge, right? We all have those moments of crisis, and sometimes, you know, we're rugged individuals, we're self-reliant individuals, we like to think we don't need anybody's help, but that's not really what it's about. I mean, having that A-team, you're a part of somebody else's A-team.
I found out the hard way that I couldn't make it on my own, and as the medic on the A-team, I was always taking care of everybody else, but then when I was wounded so dramatically, It stopped everything in my life. And before you know it, I had people taking care of me in embarrassing and humiliating ways. I had never served anyone like that the way I was being served. And the things that I'd always taken for granted came clear to me, like service itself. And I used to think that a soldier toting a gun overseas was the ultimate image of service. But now I know better. My relationship with my Creator comes first in terms of service, mm-hmm. but in a worldly perspective, Mama, she can be sick, tired, injured, hungry, and none of that matters. She's taking care of us through the night. But that kind of love and compassion is really what we're all about as a culture. I mean, even gun ownership, a lot of it has to do with having love and compassion for our condition and not allowing barbaric things to take it from us.
Absolutely. That's such a great way of putting it, too. And again, I know that there are going to be some folks who are watching this maybe who are just kind of curious about what happens at an interannual meeting. And they're going to hear, you know, this Green Beret talk about love and compassion. And this is probably going to boggle some minds here, you know. But what you're saying is absolutely true. You know, again, the reason why we have so many great members of our military is because they love this nation. They love the freedoms that we have here. They love the people, and they want to protect the people. And as you say, owning a gun for self-defense, carrying a firearm for self-defense, it's not because we want to harm somebody else. It's because we don't want to see anybody harmed.
Right. As a warrior for a career, I'm sad that we have fought worldwide to maintain safety and security and freedom, but a lot of the threats and risks and violence has come to our towns.
Absolutely.
In our cities, and it scares the devil out of me, and I don't want that to be the case. And you're touching on something that's really important to me, and that's the notion that the military is great and very important, but it's not the most important thing. We wouldn't even have a military if the fabric of freedom in our country wasn't wonderful enough that it deserved to be protected, and people are willing still at this point to volunteer and go and fight and die for it. So for me, I think the focus needs to be more on Fort Living Room than Fort Bragg, because the fabric of our nation is at home at Fort Living Room, where Mama's the commander and love and compassion is the center of the universe.
Amen. Now,
which is really the only strength we have in the long run. Because you and me, we're sitting here feeling like we're cocky and strong in certain ways.
Yep.
We're good at certain things. But we were born slobbering on ourselves, and we're going to wind up slobbering on ourselves again later. And it either happens as a slow decline in life, or something dramatic happens, and we lose those capabilities. And so for me, the things that were undeveloped as a Green Beret were those love and compassion elements, the element of service and sacrifice. Some of the things that weren't that developed were the only things I had left.
Welcome back to Cam and Company here on NRA TV, getting ready to celebrate Independence Day. Look at the Jefferson Memorial. Of course, one of the primary author, but not the only guy responsible for the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson. I also have a little bit more information about why Murray, Utah has a Beatles tribute band playing tomorrow night before the fireworks. This makes a little bit more sense here. Brooks the Lab on Twitter says, the band members are locals, born and raised here, and they're doing it for no charge. Usually, he says, the local symphony does a tribute, but the conductor passed away a couple of months ago, and so the symphony has suspended performances until a replacement has been found. So the local Beatles tribute band, imagine stepping up, playing for free on Independence Day. All right, that makes a lot more sense. And Brooks the Lab says they do a Sousa tribute, so even better. How about that? All right, I feel better about Murray, Utah. They're not exhibiting notoriousism on Independence Day here. Let's welcome our friend Andrew Langer from the Institute for Liberty to the program. Andrew, how are you, sir?
I am flush with victory, Cam. I won the ribs portion of my barbecue competition over the weekend.
Congratulations, that is fantastic. Good for you.
Trophy right up behind me over here. The pig up on the mantle. Not very big, but yeah, we took first place. We're very, very happy about that.
Excellent. Good job.
Thank you.
You're going to carry this forward into Independence Day. I assume that you're going to be cooking something on Independence Day, right?
I may be doing a shoulder. We did not win shoulder, and there's a lot of reasons why, starting with the fact that we didn't start it on time. I may be doing a pork shoulder tomorrow. No, listen, my big 4th of July plans are I'm doing a radio show live from Colonial Williamsburg tomorrow from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. interviewing George Washington, George Mason, and a handful of others from Colonial. Our good friend Amelia Hamilton from GrowingPatriots.com. She's going to be joining me by phone as well to talk about her new venture.
Oh, that is awesome. Now, yeah. I will say a radio show from Colonial Williamsburg is not exactly the most historically accurate thing in Williamsburg.
Listen,
because
not,
to the best of my knowledge, they didn't have radio back then.
Neither is talking to a founding father per se, but like Rosalind, it's like that line from the movie, the one with Jack Black and Jim Carrey and Ben Stiller, Cable Guy. You know, there were no forks in medieval times, thus there are no forks at medieval times. Would you like a refill on that Pepsi, sir? And he then asked, yeah, Pepsi. That's exactly what. Listen, you go for as much realism as possible, but listen, I'm excited to be talking to the George Washington reenactor and the George Mason reenactor, about a whole host of issues, you know, the principles upon which the nation was founded, you know, what, you know, was America intended to be an exceptional nation? What does it mean to be a nation founded on ideas as opposed to some sort of inherent identity? All of those sorts of questions.
All right. Can you do me a favor when you're talking to George Mason tomorrow?
Yes.
Will you ask him if the Second Amendment is in the Constitution because of racism?
I will absolutely ask him that. Listen, I had this great conversation last year with Patrick Henry about, because I did the same kind of a show last 4th of July, with Patrick Henry about the Second Amendment and the importance of the right to keep and bear arms as a protection against tyranny. And it was a fascinating discussion about specifically the individual's right to keep and bear arms. So I'm hoping to have some real conversations like that once again.
Excellent. All right. How can we watch this or listen to this, given that it's a radio program? How can we tune in?
You know, I may wind up doing it on Facebook Live as well. So, you know, the Andrew Langer Show on Facebook Live, that page. But also WBAL.com. There's a WBAL app that's out there. If you have smart speakers, Google Home, Amazon Alexa, just tell them to play WBAL, and it'll come up 9 a.m. to 1 p.m., and it may wind up being podcasted as well. I'm kind of hoping.
Okay, awesome. Now, obviously, WBAL out of Baltimore, Maryland, and let's talk about Baltimore if we can for just a moment or
please.
Two. Andrew, you know, we saw the horrific news last week out of Annapolis, Maryland. Five journalists killed at the Capital Gazette newspaper complex by a guy who was known to law enforcement, was known to, former and current individuals who worked at that newspaper. He had a longstanding unhinged beef with his newspaper going back about 6 years, all stemming from a stalking charge that he faced that was pled down to a misdemeanor harassment charge. And he was making, death threats against employees of this newspaper for years and years. But because this was a misdemeanor crime, he was not a prohibited person. He got off with a plea bargain and actually had that crime expunged from his record. I've seen calls for more gun control in Maryland, including for the Baltimore Sun. But I haven't heard any specifics. I mean, in fact, you'll even see this sort of occasional acknowledgement of, well, we don't know what gun control law could have been in place that would have stopped this. But this happened. And so clearly that means that there's got to be some law that we can put in place.
Well, and gubernatorial candidate Ben Jealous was on the Al Sharpton show on MSNBC talking about this and alluded to, he didn't come out and say it, and one doesn't know if it was a slip. But he was talking about how we need to focus on closing loopholes. And then he made a very curious statement about, well, and this guy in Annapolis used a shotgun, dot, 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 which seemed to indicate that he might want to try to introduce legislation to restrict shotgun purchases, though, we don't know exactly what he meant by that. But that's really the only thing. If there would have been some, not that we're calling for a restriction on shotguns, but Ben Jealous certainly seemed to be indicating it. No, in the end, once again, this was a situation where there was a failure of imagination, a failure of bureaucracy. Both the woman who was stalked and harassed, her lawyer, as well as the former editor of the Capital Gazette, now living in retirement in Florida, both said that they knew this guy. The lawyer said that the assailant was the most dangerous person he'd ever encountered. And the editor said, I predicted that this guy was going to go on a rampage in our offices. And yet somehow none of this got translated to law enforcement to the point where the judge who could have ordered a psychological evaluation did not do so. There were sort of multiple breakdowns in the legal legitimate due process that was out there.
Yeah, and I think part of it was, and I've seen a couple of interviews with the former editor, one of the guys who was the one of the targets of this guy's ire. And he said, we had these discussions with our attorneys. Do we want to proceed? Do we want to try and go bring this back to court? And I think part of it was they saw what had happened the last time. You know, this was an individual who was originally charged with stalking. His victim ended up having to move to another state, sleeps with a gun by her side. But he was allowed to plead down to a misdemeanor. He got probation. There were no repercussions whatsoever. This guy may have felt like there were repercussions, but in terms of the legal consequences, there were really none.
Let me tell you what's astounding about this whole case so far, Cam, is that, and it gets down to, as we talk about these issues and the problems with these disaffected individuals, invariably it comes down to some problem with family life, some sort of trauma in childhood. We haven't heard word one from this assailant's parents or other family members. I find it very strange that someone who worked for the Bureau of Labor Statistics for, I believe it was 7 years, none of his coworkers have said anything about this. The whole thing is just very odd to me. And it may very well be fear. This guy may have just so thoroughly frightened people that nobody wants to say anything. But nevertheless, I mean, we have no idea, where this person was before about 2007. And that's a nagging suspicion.
Talking again with Andrew Langer from the Institute for Liberty. And, Andrew, one of the other things that we haven't really talked much about, this has not been a major topic of conversation, even among journalists, is the security situation for a lot of these facilities. This was a very soft target, this building was. And the sad fact is that is the case for
most media outlets around the country. The Hill had a story. A news station in New Mexico had to cut off their broadcast for over an hour on Sunday night after an intruder entered their building. KRQE, the CBS affiliate in Albuquerque, released a statement late Sunday to explain that the outage occurred while police were searching the premises. The statement read, an hour and a half later, police gave us the all clear and we were able to continue our broadcast operations. Apparently, somebody came into the building about 8:30 in the evening, sat down on the news set, and then the building, they say, was evacuated about a half hour later. The station went to color bars, and then, you know, they looked for like an hour and a half. They brought the canines in. They didn't find anybody. So he got in and he got out without the police knowing who it was, right? And you know, I saw a couple of snarky comments from anti-gun folks on Twitter saying, oh, I suppose the NRA is going to demand army and all journalists now. Look, I have no problem with reporters or journalists having their concealed carry license and carrying on the job when it's appropriate. But even beyond that, can we have this conversation about security? Because here's the deal. You know, the reality is these are soft targets. And if I'm working in a building where, you know, there's no security guard, but there's a you got somebody at the front door that's buzzing people in and that's your security. Well, I'm demanding more.
Cam, Andrew, let's be clear here. Someone who not only who was able to barricade the back exit of this building. Now, I know this building well. I know where it is. It is, strangely enough, it's right around the corner from the home of former Governor Robert Ehrlich and his wife. It's right across the street from the Annapolis Mall. I spent a lot of time over in this neck of the woods. And that building on Bestgate Road apparently had a security guard until a couple of years ago. One doesn't know why that security guard was no longer there. Find it ironic that after they had all of this trouble with this individual, that the security guard is no longer there. But that, who knows why that decision was made. But I mean, listen, I come back to it. It's so funny. I used to get very annoyed when the transition, I would say in the mid to late 90s, you know, a lot of buildings in DC you could just breeze in and out of. And then a lot of buildings started putting in security and you had to show ID and you had to write your name down, all these things. It used to annoy me. And then there was the attacker who went to the Family Research Council's offices in DC. And had it not been for the security guard, a major tragedy would have occurred. And given that, and given the tenor of our discourse today, given how violent certain aspects of our politics can be, I'm all in favor of having security in these sorts of areas that were formerly soft targets, and now at least a little bit more hardened because of the threats that are out there.
Absolutely. And look, I'm not demanding that security look one way or another. But, you know, it was what was amazing to me is that, these folks couldn't let the snark go for 10 minutes, Andrew, to have a serious conversation about the security in their offices where they work. Instead, it was, you know, it was almost like they use snark as a shield. And if I don't treat it seriously, then I don't have to think about it seriously. And then I don't have to be worried about this. And I don't have to try to change things. It's easier just to snark about the NRA or to snark about gun owners or, you know, here's where they're going to demand next. It, you know, look, if they don't want to have that conversation, if they want to continue to remain in a place that doesn't have a lot of security, okay, that's on them, but I'm struggling to understand the opposition to even having that discussion.
Sure. Well, I mean, listen, it also comes down to, there's the discussion issue. And no, for a lot of these folks, right, their politics will not allow them to even consider the possibility of finding ways, taking proactive steps to mitigate individual risk. They don't want to do that. For them, it's all about banning guns, even though we know that doesn't work and it has all sorts of horrific unintended consequences. But then there is the other side of it, which is the immediate blame game. You know, whose fault was this? Oh, you know, this person is a white male in his 30s. Well, obviously, then white males are the problem. Or he tweeted out one thing about Donald Trump. So obviously Donald Trump is the problem. Instead of sort of going and let's actually focus on the real issues that are at hand, soft targets, issues of mental health. You know, what galled me was this reporter for the Capital Gazette. And let me be really clear. I have colleagues at WBAL who are very close to the Capital Gazette reporters. I had on my show on Saturday the former mayor of Annapolis, Maryland, Mike Pantelides. He used to work at the Capital Gazette. You know, this is a community newspaper. And one of the reporters got very angry about the prayers, you know, that whole thing of poo-pooing the prayers thing, especially the prayers of the president. I just want you to fix it. This is not about politics. Take the politics out of it. There's a horrific tragedy here. This had absolutely nothing to do with the sort of the greater political discourse that's going on. Nothing to do with what the president said about the press. Nothing to do with what Elena Kagan said about the First Amendment. It had everything to do with this crazy person and his beef with this paper over his and his psychological issues.
Yes, and that was you're right. That was something that honestly, you know, so you had that reporter in Massachusetts who actually resigned after tweeting out that this guy was wearing a Make America Great Again hat. 21 years in journalism, and he's out now because of that. And
yeah.
I did see a number of members of the press say, okay, amazingly, let's hold off on the speculation. Let's wait until we know, you know, what's actually going on. But there were a lot of people even after the facts were known, Andrew, and that was what was really disappointing. And not necessarily even journalists, but just, you know, folks with a social media presence. Who continued to insist, no, this was because of Donald Trump, or this was because of Dana Lash, or this was because of the NRA, or this was because of whoever I don't like, that's why this happened. And they know darn well that's not the truth, that's not the case. And that is really, look, that's concerning, because when you're willing to ignore the truth because a lie suits your argument better, I mean, at that point, you know, I don't even know how you actually have a conversation. How do you engage with the other side when the other side is willing to throw the truth away?
I don't think you can. Listen, I wouldn't be objective about it. I didn't say, listen, I made a huge faux pas. I was on the air when this happened, sort of reacting to this. And there was a tweet from an intern at the Capital Gazette. I tweeted at this person, please get in touch with us so we could try to get him on the air. That was insensitive of me. I immediately apologized for it, but I came in for some flack from some folks, as it was. That was the wrong instinct. I was trying to get the facts. We had a reporter on his way down there for this. You know, we're the local major news talk station in the area, but I should have thought a little bit better, and that was on me.
Well, and kudos to you for acknowledging that. You know, look, that's the tension. And it used to be this, and I saw a number of people do the same thing, and a number of people again online reacting, how insensitive, how can you? I'm with you, and this was always this is the thing. This is something that the press and the media have always done. It's just not always been on social media. You would reach out.
Yeah.
You would go and you'd track down a phone number. I mean, I recall being a young reporter, and that was one of the worst parts of the job, was knowing that somebody's dealing with a tragedy. And then you're told, okay, go and get that soundbite, go and get an interview, go and find out information. And you know that you're imposing. And so you try to do it respectfully. But there is ultimately that imposition. You're invading that person's space.
Yeah.
And, you know, as a reporter, you can say, I don't feel comfortable doing this. There was one time actually that I said, I don't feel comfortable doing it. And thankfully I had a boss who wasn't happy with it, but I didn't get fired, for saying no. But, you know, that is something that it is a part of the media and it is a part of what reporters do. I do think that as an industry, we need to figure out a way to be better about it. And as you say, that first journalistic instinct of, OK, here's somebody who's on the scene who knows what's exactly going on. Let's see if we can talk to him. It wasn't that you meant to be disrespectful. It wasn't that you meant to be, insensitive. But that was where your journalistic instincts took you. But you're right. We need to do something within this industry so that we have that space to say, but I'm not going to do that. It's not about being first. It's not about getting that incredible interview on the scene. It's about actually acknowledging the humanity of the subjects that we're dealing with here.
And it is the flip side to making sure that you have all the facts on hand before you start reporting on it. I mean, that's the other part of it, right? That's the one thing that we really don't want is – you know, all the reports that this guy had erased his fingerprints, which were all proved, you know, demonstrated to be wrong. Let's wait till the facts are in. Anyway, that's at least my thoughts on this. Yeah, I wound up doing about 5 hours on the air that day, which was not expected.
Yeah, listen, I get it. I've been there, and you know, again, we make mistakes. You move on from those mistakes. You carry those lessons with you, and hopefully, you're not going to have to put those lessons to use anytime in the future, Andrew. I do appreciate you coming on the program again. Congratulations on the Big Pig Award behind you. That is fantastic, and happy Independence Day to you, sir.
Next time we'll have you down, we'll do a shoulder with you.
All right. We'll make that happen. Andrew Langer happy joining us here on Cam and Company. Happy Independence Day to you, Andrew. Andrew actually asked if we, because I knew we had this barbecue contest going, and he actually asked me to be a part of the team, and I couldn't because Missy's chemo kind of got in the way. But he asked for some pork too, and unfortunately, I didn't realize this, but the last time we did all of our pigs, most of them were kind of on the skinnier side, so we didn't even have like any competition worthy ribs or shoulder to give Andrew. I felt kind of embarrassed by that, honestly. I feel like I should be doing better, but I'm glad to know that that didn't actually impact his ability to bring home, well, I was going to say the bacon, but I guess he won the award for ribs. All right, when we come back here on Cam and Company, Jed Babin is going to be with us. We've been talking a lot about some kind of, you know, kind of fun stories, how you celebrate your Independence Day in your community. You can still tweet us your Independence Day celebrations at Cam and Company or at Cam Edwards. But when we talk to Jed, we're going to talk about something very, very serious, a terror plot foiled in Paris that, according to authorities, is linked to an Iranian diplomat. Yeah, and this terror attack meant to target the Iranian opposition and supporters of the Iranian opposition, including people like Rudy Giuliani. We'll talk about this again with Jed Babin. Stick around. We've got more Cam and Company on the way.
The new CEO of USA Shooting, Keith Inlow, is with us, and Alexis Lagan is with us as well from the National Pistol Team. Are these the medals for this year's national championship?
Yeah, so this is my gold medal from women's sport pistol, and then I won women's, or I took second in women's air pistol.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, they're beautiful, aren't they?
They're amazing. So I'm glad we're celebrating pistol because this is, unfortunately, this is a sport that's facing some challenges right now, right?
Oh, yeah, especially with pistol. Handguns tend to be a little bit more negatively thought of. Mm-hmm. They tend to be the gun that people think of when you think of a shooting, which is very unfortunate. It's not something that I personally believe in, and so this is my sport, and that's my tool for using my sport, not a weapon.
Yeah, and even, I mean, internationally, I think we've seen even more of this. I remember the last Olympics, the British pistol shooting team mm-hmm. couldn't practice. They had to pass legislation in England so that they could actually practice in England, and they had to go to a military base, right? Because that's the restrictions on competitive shooters are so restrictive over there. So I'm curious, Keith, when we talk about this, the world of competitive shooting.
Sure.
You know, we're talking a lot about, you know, building this sport and getting more people in, but is this just a matter of survival when it comes to, you know, competitive pistol shooting?
Right now, it's a matter of, as you put it, it's survival. If we think about Lexi, and I just joined USA Shooting, so I've been here. This is week 4 for me, and I'm blessed to be here. I grew up in this industry, so as we, you know, I've been coming to shot my wife, and I figured this out last night. I think it's like my 23rd or 24th SHOT Show.
Wow.
So grew up in the industry, and when I joined USA Shooting that first week, and someone like Lexi, who's wholesome All-American and has medals that you could eat off of, who wants to get to the podium, that's my job. I knew I was in the right place to make sure that we support athletes like Lexi, to make sure we're supporting basically pistol shooting in America and making sure that we support all of those athletes that want to make it to the Olympics. And that first week, right there out of the gate, had the challenges of, okay, we're going to support the rifle sports and we're going to support the shotgun sports from the Olympic Committee. Mm-hmm. We as an organization now for USA Shooting had to figure out how we're going to basically go support the pistol side of shooting, reaching out to the industry, and have gotten really good feedback. So I'm really excited early on with the feedback we're getting from a lot of our industry partners to make sure that, you know, folks like Lexi can make it to the podium. You can see she leads with her heart and, you know, loves this sport, so it's my job to make sure she gets supported.
And why do you love this sport so much, Lexi?
It's something that I didn't really actually learn about until college, And it was something that I grew up with. My dad's a police officer here in Las Vegas. And so from a very young age, there was firearms in the home. And it was something that my grandfather taught me, my dad taught me. All of our family's very involved in shooting. And so when I got to college and needed to make friends and found this wonderful sport and made all these wonderful connections and friends here in the country and outside, it was just wonderful. Everyone's so involved when you are a shooter. Everyone's so, it's like a giant family. And we were even talking about it earlier that SHOT Show kind of feels like a giant family reunion.
Yeah, that's how I was always described the NRA annual meetings, the world's biggest family reunion.
Oh, yeah.
And you're right. SHOT has that same aspect because, you know, this industry, I don't know if it works this way in every industry, but it's this weird blend of, yeah, we're all competitors, right? If we're manufacturers, we're competing against these other folks, but we're also all in this together,
mm-hmm.
right? And we have to recognize that, okay, if someone targets me and my business, well, they're also going to be targeting my competitor. They're targeting
right.
the entire industry. They're not just singling out one company or another.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in terms of that, the relationship that you've found with the industry, Keith, what type of response are you seeing in terms of support for a competitive pistol?
So far, it's early. So I'm week four. You know, even before I joined, we'd reached out to...
You've been here a month. You haven't solved
I've been here
it.
A month.
Haven't
we haven't solved the problem yet. So I'm trying. So I live by this mantra, under commit and over deliver. But I will tell you, we actually have a breakfast meeting tomorrow with a lot of the industry leads, and I could go through the list. I won't, because I consider everyone here an industry partner.
Sure.
So we have an unbelievable opportunity, as you put it, with the family that's here, Lexi,
mm-hmm.
to reach out to say, hey, we have your Olympic athletes. Shooting is your Olympic sport. So is all of our athletes had that vision for 2020, just like Lexi, who are training at the Olympic Training Center. They want to make their way there. So for everyone here and all those folks across America to say, hey, shooting is my Olympic sport, that's something that we can rally behind.
Top of the hour, today's hero of the day, our deal of the day, good guy as well, plus Dr. Andrew Hawkins of Breitbart and Sheila Gunn-Reed of The Rebel. You've got a Tory member of parliament in Canada talking about no easy answer to end Toronto gun violence. That's right. Violence in Toronto, Canada, where an upcoming rapper shot and killed over the weekend. Right now, I want to welcome to the program our friend Jed Babin from the London Center for Policy Research. Jed, how are you this afternoon, sir?
Trying to stay cool. How are you?
Yeah, good luck with that. We're sitting at about 78, 79 degrees here in the studio in Farmville. That's with the air conditioner running. And before we get started on the very serious topic that we're about to discuss here, I do have to ask, any Independence Day traditions that you'll be celebrating tomorrow?
Not really. We have, various in-laws and outlaws coming in at, different times, and it varies from year to year. But, we always just have a little cookout here at the house, and, fire up the regular barbecue, and off we go.
There you go. All right. Well, listen, I wish you a very happy Independence Day, and glad
you
could join us on the program. Now, let's talk about this crazy story out of Europe here. So this past weekend, you had a conference of Iranian opposition groups that were meeting in Paris to discuss their strategies for regime change. There were going to be several luminaries speaking, including Rudy Giuliani. And according to police in several European capitals, the Iranian regime was planning a terror attack on the hotel complex where the conference took place. There have been a husband and wife who were arrested. They are of Iranian descent, I guess, Iranian origin, and authorities found an ignition device and 500 grams of TATP, which is a homemade explosive. You've also got a 46-year-old diplomat at the Iranian embassy in Austria who has been arrested by German police. French police arrested a 54-year-old described as an accomplice, and law enforcement say that it's believed that this Iranian diplomat was the point of contact for this couple that actually had the explosives in their possession when they were arrested, Jed.
Well, absolutely no surprise there. This Paris conference happens roughly the same time every year. It's run by the National Council of Resistance in Iran. It's NCRI is a sort of blanket group for Iranian expatriate dissidents. And the crowd there, and I went to one of these conferences, by the way, about 10 years ago, but they usually draw a crowd of about 10,000 people in one great big room. So obviously it's a big terror target for the Iran regime, because for some reason, this group, NCRI, which also used to be known as the Mujahideen-e-Khalq, is one of their principal energies. They're terrified of MEK and NCRI, and certainly it stands to reason that for that reason, they would try to take on the group with some sort of terror attack and cause all sorts of damage. This is just what these guys do, Cam. I mean, these are bad, bad guys. They're the principal terror sponsor in the world. And, you know, this is what you got to expect. They're a rogue power, and it's time that somebody did something about it. I think Mr. Trump is making some headway.
I think you're right. You know, and it's interesting because as Trump has been talking about dealing more harshly with the Iranian regime, it's been a lot of these EU nations that have said, oh, no, let's not break up this deal that the Obama administration worked out and the P plus five, what is it, the P five plus one nations. Right. Let's stick to this agreement. Why would you stick to an agreement? Why would you agree to anything that's coming out of Iran right now? And does this, Jed, are these European Union nations, are they going to largely ignore the terror threat, or is this going to be a wake-up call for some of these regimes?
Well, I think it's past the point where any of these regimes in Europe can wake up. They have long since surrendered their defenses to others, to us mainly, and we've been paying to defend them for, well, since World War II. They have become totally dependent on us, and the more important part is that they have not only become totally dependent upon us for their defense, they are now totally ignoring it. I mean, they just do not see any reason why they shouldn't trade with Iran. They shouldn't sell them aircraft and God only knows what else. They shouldn't sell and or actually buy Iranian oil. You know, you see an awful lot of nations around the world. Heck, India and South Korea are among two of the biggest buyers of Iranian oil. And I think that's all going to come to a crashing halt in November when President Trump puts on some really stiff restrictions on Iranian oil.
Talking to you with Jed Babin of the London Center for Policy Research. Will we see any sort of diplomatic reaction to this specifically, Jed, or are the European nations likely to just sort of let this play out from a law enforcement perspective?
Well, I think you're already seeing some of it. You know, they have taken an awful lot of trouble to vilify Mr. Trump. You saw that at the G7 summit. You're going to see that again in the NATO summit next week. There's an awful lot of things that they've done and are doing because they don't want to give up the trade with Iran. I mean, frankly, Cam, these guys are nations of shopkeepers. I have very little respect for them because, again, they are not interested in their own national security, and that's the first duty of every nation is to protect its citizens. These guys just apparently don't care.
Again, Jed Babin with the London Center for Policy Research, and no, they clearly don't. And you know, I'm curious as well, Jed. I haven't seen any acknowledgement of any of this from any of the former Obama staffers who have been, you know, so vociferously defending the Obama administration and the deal that they made with Iran. I mean, you know, anytime Iran comes up in the news, you got Ben Rhodes and Tommy Vitter and John Favreau. They're all, you know, tweeting furiously about what a great deal it was and how you nincompoops on the right, you don't know anything. I don't think they're willing to acknowledge that this is who they were willing to deal with. This is who they were sending pallets of cash to, and this is who they trusted. In terms of making and striking this deal?
Sure. I mean, you'll never see them make an admission of an error because they made so many of them. I mean, this is probably the biggest of all. The Iranian nuclear weapons deal with Obama was the biggest and most catastrophic problem that they caused. But Mr. Trump got us out of it. But, you know, you look at the other things they did. You know, I remember at one point, while this negotiation of the Iran deal was going on, then Secretary of State John Kerry was talking to some reporters, and they accused him of overlooking some of the real problems that Iran is causing in the world. And he said something to the effect of, well, I don't know how you get those criticisms. We're not all idiots here. Well, excuse me, Mr. Kerry, but, you know, kind of you guys are. So that's just you look at Benghazi, you look at so many things that the Obama administration did that were catastrophically damaging to the national security. You know, the Russia deal on nuclear weapons that they made, the New START agreement. I mean, there's so many things we could tick off. And without getting into the weeds, there are a lot of features of all of those things that are vast policy mistakes by the Obama administration. you're never going to see any admission to any of them, pal.
Well, I think you're right about that. Jed, listen, I appreciate you coming on the program, sir. Happy Independence Day to you, and look forward to talking to you very soon.
Well, same to you. Have a great fourth, and hope we'll do it again soon.
Absolutely, sir. Jed Babin with us from the London Center for Policy Research on the program. Coming up top of the hour, we have our hero of the day. We have our deal of the day. We have our good guy brought to you by our friends at Odor Crusher. Also, Sheila Gunn-Reed of the Rebel on the mayor of Toronto. I said a Tory member of parliament. No, I said John Tory. It was the mayor of Toronto. That's confusing, Cameron. They shouldn't allow that. That'd be like having a... That's like having Senator Democrat. That's just not, I mean, you shouldn't, no. No. He should be forced to change his name. John Tory, the mayor of Toronto, saying that there's no easy answer to end Toronto gun violence. That's not what gun control advocates want to hear in Toronto. They want to hear, yeah, there is. We just have to pass even more gun control laws in Canada. And violent crime has been on the increase in Toronto. We mentioned yesterday on the program, the murder of a up-and-coming young rapper in Toronto who was killed outside of a nightclub this weekend. And the again, this is primarily gang-related violence. And the answer to stemming this gang-related violence, according to gun control advocates, go after people who aren't gang members but who are legal gun owners. Is that going to work? I don't think so. Stick around. Hour three of Cam and Company. It's on the way right after this. Our friends Juliana Crowder, Robin Sandoval from A Girl and a Gun Club are with us. So what do you have coming up in 2018?
So our biggest event of the year is our national conference. We have 400 women coming to just outside Austin, Texas for our annual training conference. It's always so much fun to get all these women together. There's competition, there's self-defense, there's pistols, rifles, shotguns. We have ladies shooting from the helicopter, shooting from the ground, you name it, we do it. It's great fun.
Wow.
Yeah, so we give a lot of different life experiences, obviously, at conference. I mean, it's not like, you know, you're going to drop out of a helicopter for self-defense every day, but if you can go shoot full auto from a helicopter for fun, why not?
Why
you
not? Exactly. That is awesome. So that's going to be just outside of Austin, Texas. And it's amazing that y'all have been around for 7 years. I mean, that's incredible to me.
You know, it's been grassroots, and it's just growing. And every year it grows more, and every year it kind of changes. And our leaders want more. Our members want more. And so every year they just push us to keep, you know, creating new programs, new opportunities. And so this year, we're really focusing on education for our instructors and, you know, just kind of raising the bar on that level.
So before we get too far into the plans for a Girl in a Gun Club this year, I'm guessing most of our audience is familiar with a Girl in a Gun Club. But for those who aren't, what is the purpose? What is the mission of a Girl in a Gun Club?
Well, we host Girls Night Out at the Range, and we host different training events, you know, for self-defense, for competition. If you're a brand new shooter, we have a lot of ladies that come in. 70% of our members or participants have never shot a gun before, so we're often a starting point. So we're just building community. We're just girls getting together, having fun, shooting guns, and then it just grows and blossoms from there. We are in 48 states, and we service over 150 ranges nationwide.
Wow, that's amazing. And so you've got these events, but it sounds like you're also building a community.
It's all about community.
Is that it?
That's the thing. And, you know, on a personal note, so my daughter's been battling brain cancer for 3 years. And like I say, when the Grim Reaper stands before you, you reach out for resources. You will do anything it takes, and you're going to find other families who have been in that situation. Who are the best specialists? Who are the best doctors? Who can be there for me during this moment? And I found that it's similar. To arm people with that information and to arm them with confidence is really what we do on so many levels. When Hurricane Harvey happened, our phone was ringing off the hook. People were reaching out to us. There was a 911 system that was overburdened. Ladies were scared. They didn't know where to turn. And they called us, and they said, how do I get a gun? How do I get training? How do I get started? I'm feeling scared. And we armed them with knowledge. We said, you're coming to a place where people understand you, where you can find resources, where you can find support. And we don't try to pretend to be... We're just regular moms, you know? But when the Grim Reaper stands before you, whether it's brain cancer, whether it's a bad guy in the night, not on my watch. And we're going to give you those tools
and
to help.
We've been able to bridge that gap with that idea of, you know, that women are mama bears. And, you know, a lot of the times someone will say, well, would you use a gun to defend yourself? And they're like, oh, I don't know. But then you bring in, well, what would you do to defend your kids? And you see this transformation.
Yeah.
So like, we say, well, if you're not there to defend yourself, who's going to defend your kids?
Just like on the plane, you have to put the mask on yourself to protect your child.
It's a total mind shift for them.
You know, that's really interesting that you talk about that, because I've seen that myself with people who, again, it's not about them, right? If it's just me, if I live by myself, I probably wouldn't own a gun. But I don't just live by myself. It's not just me alone. And that, you're right. I mean, that, you know, look, when you become a parent, your life shifts anyway, right? And your priorities shift. Mm-hmm. So it makes sense in that respect. So do you see a lot of moms coming in? Are there you know, more moms than childless women who are involved in the Girl in the Gun Club?
We have a lot of grandmas nowadays.
Okay.
You know, people who are retired have a little more time, a little more money, that maybe they feel vulnerable, or maybe they're just looking for that next challenge.
It really kind of depends on the woman and what where she's at in the stage of her life.
NRA TV with Cam Edwards.
Welcome back. Hour 3 of Cam and Company starts right now, fueled by our friends at Hornady Ammunition, coming to you once again from beautiful downtown Farmville, Virginia, where we are just mere hours away from our Independence Day fireworks the day before Independence Day. At the Farmville Municipal Airport, by the way, if you were thinking about driving down to Farmville, Virginia, or maybe driving up or over, it's at the Municipal Airport. How many airlines serve the greater Farmville Municipal Airport, you ask? Well, that would be none. That would be none. But there are, you know, a couple of crop dusters and some biplanes, maybe some Piper Cubs that fly in and out. So I think they'll be closing down the air traffic, although that could make it really exciting, Cameron, if they just kept it going, right? Ray, we forgot to tell you, but we're doing fireworks tonight, so just avoid the mortars as you're landing here. I think we'll be fine. And like I said, for the first time in, I think, 3 years, it's not going to rain on July the 3rd, so we actually will have fireworks tonight in Farmville. Hopefully you are getting ready for a fantastic Independence Day holiday. Just a reminder that we will not be with you tomorrow. Now, I realize the show is 2 to 5 Eastern, and the fireworks usually don't kick off until, you know, the evening hours, so technically we could be here, but there was going to be a mutiny if I said, hey, let's do a show tomorrow. So we're going to take tomorrow off for Independence Day. We'll be back with you on Thursday and Friday of this week. And we will have a fantastic program for you, I promise, each and every one of those days. Right now, let's get to, actually, before we get to our hero of the day and our deal of the day and our good guy of the day, we'll tell you what's coming up throughout the rest of this hour here. About 20 minutes from now, Dr. A.W.R. Hawkins is going to join us from Breitbart News. We'll talk about some of the big Second Amendment stories around the nation. Also, Sheila Gunn Reed is going to join us on the program as well from The Rebel, talking about what's going on up in Canada, where the mayor of Toronto says there is no easy answer to solving the increasing gun violence there in Toronto. But right now, let's get to our hero of the day, our deal of the day, and our good guy of the day. Hero of the day from KDVR out in Colorado, Douglas County, Colorado. Kind of a crazy story. An alleged carjacking led to a shootout with an unsuspecting camper. When was this? Was this a week ago? No, this may have been... maybe today. It was approximately 2:09 p.m. Douglas County Sheriff's Office notified of a carjacking that had taken place in El Paso County. The suspect, a 29-year-old male, drove a stolen car into the Pike National Forest and shot at passing vehicles. He ultimately stopped his car at Devil's Head Campground and then walked up to a camper. The suspect was armed with a rifle, began confronting that camper. As the confrontation ensued, the rifle was pointed at the camper slash victim, and the camper returned fire, according to authorities. The Manitou Springs Police Department, who had been monitoring the call, arrived on the scene to provide assistance until the Douglas County Sheriff's Office deputies arrived. When deputies arrived on scene, the suspect was treated and taken to an area hospital. So he was wounded, again, by that armed camper. Suspect is considered right now in stable condition. He is going to be facing charges out of Douglas County, also charges out of El Paso County as well. And all of the campsites, they're going to be closed for at least the next 48 hours. So that might put a crimp in several folks' Independence Day plans if they're going to go camping in that area. The good news is, though, that the intended victim of this guy was able to defend himself and protect himself. Suspect in the hospital, and the victim is alive and well. He is today's hero of the day. Our deal of the day, I've got two for you. First, from Chicago, East Chicago, the Northwest Indiana Times, Crown Point, a 23-year-old man sentenced Monday for reckless homicide in the shooting death of his 4-year-old nephew at an East Chicago apartment. Lamario Delgado Gonzalez told Judge Clarence Murray he was sorry for accidentally shooting Gary and Glover Jr. the night of May 11th at an apartment in the 3500 block of Guthrie Street. He said he loved his nephew unconditionally, said he wanted to heal with his family. He said this shouldn't define me or break my character. Mr. Delgado Gonzalez was arrested December 17th in Normal, Illinois. He was extradited to Lake County to face charges of murder, neglect of a dependent resulting in death, as well as reckless homicide and his nephew's shooting. East Chicago police dispatched May 11th for a report of an assault with a firearm, according to court records. The 4-year-old's mom, Lajari Delgado Gonzalez, said she woke up to a noise in the living room where her son had been watching television and his uncle had been sleeping on the couch. The child was found on the floor bleeding from the mouth not far from the couch where Delgado Gonzalez had been sleeping. 45 caliber handgun found on a pile of clothes across from the couch. A spent shell casing found stuck in the gun. Delgado Gonzalez told police that he was in a, quote, pot coma at the time of the shooting. He submitted to a gun residue test, which was positive. He denied owning a gun. Instagram photos showed him holding a gun in the apartment where the shooting occurred. He pleaded guilty May 14th to reckless homicide, which is a level 5 felony, and admitted that he unintentionally shot his nephew. That 4-year-old's mom, Lajara Delgado Gonzalez, told the judge at the sentencing hearing she wanted her brother to be sentenced to probation. She said that she knew that her brother did not shoot her son on purpose. The 4-year-old's grandmother, Latoya Unique Glover, told the judge she wanted to see Delgado Gonzalez get the maximum sentence of 6 years in prison for the crime. She said that the 4-year-old's father was fatally shot more than 4 years ago, and Gary and Glover Jr. was her last remaining connection to her son. She said he never got the chance to turn 5. You killed him a week before his birthday. Delgado Gonzalez's defense attorney, Cipriano Rodriguez, requested leniency for his client. Said his client had 6 children, whom he supported through a promising rap career. Yeah. Lamario Delgado Gonzalez had won several open mic competitions as a rap artist and expected to sign to a record label before the shooting. Now, the prosecutor in this case, Nadia Wardrip, said Lamario Delgado Gonzalez had a lengthy criminal history dating back to his first arrest as a juvenile in 2009. And Nadia Wardrip said he might have a budding career as a rap artist, but respectfully, this country doesn't need more rap artists. It needs less gun violence. The judge said under the law, what happened to this 4-year-old was not an accident. It was a crime. He said he believed that Delgado Gonzalez was sincerely remorseful for what had happened, but he also noted that his behavior seems to have gotten worse since his first arrest in 2009. The judge said anyone with common sense would not handle a gun with a small child in a room. It's almost unfathomable that anybody would do that. And he sentenced Delgado Gonzalez to 5 years in prison, suspended 1 year of that sentence to be served on probation, so he'll do 4. He'll actually do less than 4 because he'll get time off for good behavior behind bars. And I'm kind of wondering, given that this guy had a lengthy criminal history going back nearly a decade, why wasn't he charged with being a felon in possession of a firearm? I mean, again, if that case had been filed, if it had been referred to federal court, if U.S. attorneys had taken this case,
Mr. Delgado Gonzalez would have been looking at 10 years behind bars simply for being a felon in possession of a firearm as opposed to the 4 years that he's going to serve for killing his 4-year-old nephew. And once again, it is worth noting that here's an individual. He had an accidental shooting of a young child, and gun control advocates say, well, the way we stop this is we have these storage laws, like what they're trying to put in the books in Washington State. Well, how many laws did Lomario Delgado Gonzalez break in conjunction with the death of his 4-year-old nephew? He wasn't supposed to have a gun in the first place, right? A pot coma he was in, he said, at the time that he accidentally shot his 4-year-old nephew. Imagine that there were a number of laws that were broken here. And I imagine that if you put a storage requirement on the books there for Lomario Delgado Gonzalez, he would have just failed to obey that law too. Unfortunately, what we see a lot of times, not in every case certainly, but in many of these cases where you have an accidental discharge of a firearm that results in injury or death, these are individuals who don't legally own the firearm to begin with. They don't have in many cases they've lost the right to keep and bear arms. But this is not a symptom of lawful gun culture. This is a symptom in many cases of illegal and illicit gun culture. And again, the way the gun control advocates want to deal with it is to attack lawful gun ownership and the gun culture that talks about and promotes training and responsibility. Again, aiming at their priorities in the wrong direction. Our second deal of the day comes from Cameron Gray, who sent this along just a few minutes ago. This is from the Jewish Voice in Long Island, where they report two people responsible for the deaths of an engaged couple were arraigned on grand jury indictment charges in a Nassau County courtroom. Zakiya Stewart, who's 25, and 35-year-old Ramel Watkins were drag racing down the Nassau Expressway and crashed into 21-year-old Yisrael Levine and 20-year-old Elisheva Kaplan. The pair were killed instantly. The defendants returned to court July 18th. Stewart could face up to 25 years in prison. Watkins could spend 5 to 15 years in prison. And a Brooklyn judge has admitted that he's been too lenient with one of these suspects before. Zakiya Stewart, not once, but twice, was sent into a rehabilitation program after being convicted for a burglary spree and over the objections of prosecutors who had requested incarceration. So not once, but twice, a judge told this defendant, you know, prosecutors say you should go behind bars. I'm looking here at a crime spree that you've engaged in. But I don't think that incarceration is what you need. I think we're going to send you to rehabilitation instead. And when that didn't work, they sent him back. Out on the streets instead of behind bars, Zakiya Stewart, 25 years of age, now facing, again, 25 years in prison for the deaths of two innocents on Long Island. He is today's second deal of the day. Our good guy of the day from KTVB in Boise, Idaho, where right now, Cameron, it's 70 degrees, according to KTVB. Oh, holy moly. Can we just do a week in Idaho? Can we just do a week of shows?
I wouldn't mind that anyway, weather aside, but that would be nice.
That would be. Boise, Idaho. Nedim Savchik was working on a house that's under construction in Boise when a deadly police shooting broke out on Sunday. Nedim said, I heard somebody screaming, no, let me go, no. And he said, I thought it was neighbors. And then he saw a guy run to the side of the house that he was working on. He said he kind of looked back, and as he looked back, I looked back, and that's when I saw Officer Mikowski running after him and yelling for him to stop. So this all started, according to KTVB, when police tried to make a traffic stop Sunday afternoon
And instead of stopping, one of the cars stopped. Then one guy gets out, takes off on foot, and ends up opening fire at police officers. Kyle Makowski was shot twice in the legs, but he managed to return fire, killing the suspect. Two other suspects in that vehicle bailed out. They took off running. One, a male suspect, turned himself into police, but a female at last report still on the loose, still being wanted by police. The suspect who was killed after shooting at officers, 33-year-old Daniel Isaiah Norris. He died at the scene from multiple gunshot wounds. Meanwhile, Nadim Savchik is watching all of this unfold literally right in front of his eyes. And he sees Officer Makowski get hit. He says, I noticed the officer got hit because his leg gave out. And there was a car parked next to him, and he was able to lean on the vehicle and draw his weapon. And then he drew his weapon. He fired at the suspect. And Nadim climbed down off of the house that's under construction, ran over to the officer. He said, I asked Makowski to sit down because he was bleeding quite a bit. But he said that he wanted to keep an eye on the guy in case he moves. He said, when the suspect took his last breath, I went up and I moved the weapon so it's not close to him. And then I got back to Officer Makowski and we were trying to control the blood. He says, I took my shirt off and I laid him down and I put it underneath his head. Nadim Chavchik kept the officer talking until paramedics arrived. And he said, as he was laying on the stretcher, I looked at his name tag and I realized his name looks really familiar. And, you know, Boise's a good sized town. I mean, it's not a huge city. Well, it turns out Nadim and his son had actually met Officer Makowski about a month earlier because Nadim and his son took donuts to officers just last month. He said, we went down to the Meridian Police Department. We talked to the front lady who said that she would get two officers to come out and greet us. And one of those officers was Officer Makowski. Nadim said it was really just a coincidence. And he said, I guess fate, that I happened to be the one there to assist him and really repay him for making my son's day. He said, even when all this was happening, Officer Makowski was concerned with my safety and keeping his eye on the suspect. So, yes, he says, I did help him. But at the end of the day, he was my hero, and he still had my back. So in the right place at the right time, and the good news is Officer Kyle Makowski is out of the hospital. He is recovering. Officer Makowski, obviously, one of our good guys out there, but we also want to thank Nadim Chavkik in the right place at the right time, willing and able to help out and do the right thing. And we thank you both for being some of the many, many good guys out there. All right, when we come back here on Cam and Company, Dr. AWR Hawkins of Breitbart News, also later in the hour, Sheila Gunn-Reed of The Rebel will talk about what's going on with our neighbors to the north. The mayor of Toronto says there's no easy answer for the increasing violence in the city. Gun control advocates, though, they think they have an easy answer. All you have to do is, quote, do something. Stick around. There's more Cam and Company coming up next.
Speaking with Dirk Grove from NRA Store, I'm always excited to talk about, Dirk, what's new at NRA Store? What do you got for us today?
We've got a couple exciting items. One of the most important things that I wanted to talk about was, as you all know, there are some folks out there that have changed their cooler brands lately, and we have a really nice cooler from Orca. It's a 20-quart cooler. It's roto-molded with 2 inches of insulation, so it's supposed to keep ice cold for 10 days, which is
wow.
Kind of amazing to me.
Yeah.
It's 20 quarts, so it's a manageable size, and it's a nice black, and it has a nice gold, huge NRA on the top of the cooler.
I heard a little something about that cooler thing, so it's great to see NRA stepping up and bringing a product like this forward. It's a beautiful-looking cooler, and it's perfect timing because, you know, it's getting to be that outdoor weather time out there, Dirk, all across the country. So that's awesome.
Exactly.
Yes.
And folks that are going to carry those coolers to the beach will want to wear our new T-shirt.
Ah, good segue, it Dirk, says, by the way. Very
good. Says
well
everything you need to say. It says, and I am the NRA. And it's red, white, and blue. And it comes in men's and ladies' sizes. So we're not going to leave anyone out. And it's must wear for the summer.
Awesome. Now, Dirk, I need to ask you a point of personal preference. When they're men's sizes, they're good men's sizes. Like a guy of my size, I'm so frustrated when I get a shirt, I wear a 2X, and it doesn't fit me very well. I imagine these are good roomy shirts.
They're good and roomy, but, you know, we do offer 3X if you would like to avail yourself of that as well.
I'll take that in, Dirk. I'd rather the shirt be too big than too small, so that's awesome. The I Am the NRA shirt, perfect for the for summertime wearing.
And so, you know, we know that if you're going to be wearing that shirt, you might be supporting us politically, but there's a really good chance that you're also going to be a shooter. And so because of that, we have some things specifically for shooters.
Good.
One of the things we have is our new updated cleaning mats.
Ooh.
Our cleaning mats, we started out with cleaning mats a few years ago, and we sold just a boatload of them. We only offered AR-15 and 1911. Now, we've updated these with all new diagrams, and they are heavily researched diagrams, so I'm very confident in the accuracy. But we offer AR-15, we offer 1911, we offer Glock Generation 4, and we offer a Remington 870. And by the way, the 870 is long enough to actually place your 870 on it while you're cleaning it.
Awesome.
They're solvent proof, moisture proof. They'll keep your kitchen table nice and clean while you're cleaning your firearms.
Perfect. Speaking with Dirk Grove from NRA Store, what else you got, Dirk?
I got one more thing today. We've been working with the makers of Sport Ear. They make hearing protection. They've got some earbuds. They call them the Axel Ghost Strike. What's really cool about these things is they amplify sounds up to 6 times, but anytime they detect a noise that's higher than 85 decibels, then they automatically suppress and protect your ears.
Wow, that's cool. It's so great, Dirk. There's so much good high technology, and it's so important to protect your hearing when you're a shooter. So it's good to see the NRA store once again stepping up with a product like this for folks who are out there shooting. That's good stuff.
But we know our audience.
You think you figured it out by now, huh, Dirk Grove?
I think so, yeah. And by the way, the audience can always find us at – they can get a new catalog if they like, but it's 1-800-877-6007 or NRAstore.com.
There you go. How easy. I always look forward to getting my catalog in the mail, Dirk Grove. Love it. Love it when you're on the program. We appreciate it. NRA Store, check out all these great new products and all the other stuff from NRA Store. Thank you, Dirk Grove.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Welcome back to Cam and Company. Here on NRA TV, Cam Edwards, your host. Still to come on the program, Sheila Gunn Reid of The Rebel will be with us on the program. Right now, I want to welcome to the show from Breitbart, Dr. A.W.R. Hawkins is with us. How are you, Dr. Hawkins?
I'm good. How are you?
I am excellent. So I will ask you the question that we have been asking all of our guests today, although it's going to be really awkward when I ask our Canadian friend, Sheila Gunn Reid, how she celebrates American Independence Day. How do you celebrate Independence Day? What are your traditions, Dr. Hawkins?
Oh, we always find a fireworks display. In our little town, there's a pretty massive fireworks display for such a little town. We always hit that. And usually, if we're home, we end up at a hotel that has a swimming pool in the lazy river. We spend a couple of days there. And then, as I say, fireworks and food. We're out of town. We're out of town for this 4th, but we will be watching fireworks being shot in a bay off a barge, and I look forward to that very much. But that's pretty much always the central thing. We gather around and take friends in lawn chairs, just like you did when you were a kid, and watch that happen.
That is awesome, man. Yeah, you just can't beat that. I'm glad you're going to be able to spend Independence Day with family and get a chance to celebrate it. Now, we got a lot of stuff to talk about here. I'm going to give you a story. I just saw this story, Dr. Hawkins, so I don't expect that you've seen this, but this is an unbelievable story. This is from the Connecticut Post out of Stamford, Connecticut. A Bridgeport, Connecticut man who was assaulted by 3 juveniles while he was at work in Norwalk, Connecticut, will have to spend 18 months in jail for stabbing one of the attackers. 21-year-old Jeffrey Sumpner told Judge John Blowey yesterday at the Stamford Courthouse, "I was defending myself. The judge said, I understand
He said, I believe you. You were defending yourself. I have to follow the letter of the law. And in Connecticut, you have a duty to retreat. You cannot stand your ground and defend yourself. You have to turn and run away. And so even though this guy was working at his job at the Dunkin' Donuts after he was assaulted inside that coffee shop, the law in Connecticut requires that this guy try to turn and run from his attackers as he's being assaulted rather than defend himself. After he was being assaulted inside the coffee shop, Sumter ran outside, stabbed one of the men. The prosecutor in the case said that a search of one of the men had turned up shotgun shells, showing that the four were looking to hurt Sumner. The judge said, I hope that this is going to be your last prison sentence. Because now that you've been convicted of felony first-degree assault, you're going to be treated more harshly by the criminal justice system going forward. So the judge says, yeah, I realize you're acting in self-defense. I realize you were just protecting yourself. You still got to go to prison.
It's ridiculous. I mean, it's like saying that you have a duty to breathe underwater before you breathe above water. In other words, you have to act unnatural before you can act natural. Stupid. And this felony conviction will mean, of course, now he's going to have problems with firearm purchases and everything else. This is silly. And, of course, they don't have a governor that you could count on to throw this out. Their governor probably won't even care about this. So I hate that for the guy. I hope he can get an appeal to a court that will see this rationally and throw this out.
Absolutely. Now, you've got another story at Breitbart right now, kind of breaking news this morning, Overland Park, Kansas, where two workers were wounded after shots were fired outside of an elementary school there in Overland Park, Kansas. Gun control advocates, I am sure, will try to use this as an excuse to push for more gun control laws. And you know, I'm sure we'll hear snark about, why would you want to arm teachers? Facts of this case, as you report, the shooting suspect believed to have been involved in an earlier carjacking, as well as a second, separate, unsuccessful carjacking. In fact, police, you report looking at three different crime scenes related to this shooting. We don't know a whole lot of details about the suspect, but it sure seems like, once again, this is a case of a violent criminal here, targeting unarmed law-abiding residents, law-abiding citizens, law-abiding employees of this school district. I don't know how on earth the gun control advocates could try to take us from this to we need more gun control laws, but you know darn well they're going to try to do it.
Right, they're going to, but it won't work, but you're right. You know, you mentioned arming teachers. I mean, of course, there's no school in session, but this is still a perfect example of why teachers should be armed, because you've got a criminal. He's stealing cars. He somehow ends up on school grounds long enough to shoot these two individuals. You know, why should teachers or any other member of the school staff be forced to be a sitting duck? I think we're winning that argument going away. I really do. I think our U.S. Congress and Senate has been very slow to act, but at the state level, we're getting action across the country, which is wonderful. But I think we need a fuller support from the GOP in Congress for armed teachers. But I think that's just one of the points that could be made here. It looks like what we're going to find out is you're dealing with a criminal who happened to flee to a school, not by plan, but just happened to flee to a school. I don't know if he had some kind of criminal connection with the workers or if he shot them randomly, but those are the kinds of things you're going to find out. This wasn't a situation where students were targeted, but it's still a situation that reminds you teachers need to be armed in case they are there when the criminal comes.
Amen. You know, we were just talking yesterday with our friend Laura Carno from Faster Colorado. They had another training session for educators in Colorado last week, a full class of 20 individuals. They're going to be running at least one more class this summer. We know that the Faster program in Ohio, they're running courses for educators all summer long right now. And, you know, it's interesting. I mean, you've got these anti-gun celebrities. You've got the anti-gun politicians that keep poo-pooing this idea. We hear all the time, no teacher wants to do this. No teacher's in support of this. And yet somehow, Dr. Hawkins, we keep seeing these classes fill up with teachers. It's the weirdest
right.
thing.
And I do love that when they go, they'll say, teachers don't want to carry guns. Well, I know a lot of them that do. I'm sorry. And you can find a bunch of them, as you say, in Ohio and in Colorado. You can find them in Kentucky. I think we've got 20% of the districts in Texas, the teachers are allowed to be armed. Seems like they want to do it. And on and on and on I can go. And this is the left loves to use the phrase common sense. This is the common sense response. When unarmed teachers are killed in classrooms, when their only means of defense are to throw an eraser, a pencil, or a shoe, it only makes sense to say, you know what, that's not humane. It's not humane. Let's give them a tool with which they can defend their lives, and that tool is a firearm. And when we start to do that, we are really using common sense, and we're not just protecting teachers, we're protecting teachers and their students as well.
We're talking with Dr. A.W. Hawkins of Breitbart. One other story, a couple of stories I want to talk about as well. Yesterday, you reported on the June NICS numbers, which were released. Now, the bad news is that this was not a record-setting June. This was not the most background checks performed in a month of June ever. That would still be, I believe, a June of 2016. But this was number two. This was the right. second highest June on record in terms of the NICS numbers, which, again, we've seen record-setting May and April. I think we've had 3 months this year that have set right. records for NICS checks. Clearly, there are still a lot of Americans, despite the, again, the poo-pooing and the finger-wagging from those anti-gun celebrities. That message doesn't really seem to be resonating, Dr. Hawkins, because there are a lot of right. Americans who are going out there and exercising their right to keep and bear arms.
Right. And if you want to go back a lot further than June, if you want to go back to December 2016, the first full month after Trump's election, you know, we had had prior to that 19 straight months of consecutive record-breaking months for NICS background checks. And then December fell off and the left couldn't have been happier. Ah, ha, ha, you voted Trump in and now the records are over. But what they missed is that December, though below record-setting level, was the third highest December in history. And it's the same kind of thing we see now with June, the second highest June in history as far as background checks go. And so it's like I was speaking, I believe, in either December 2016 or December 2017 with Marty Daniel of Daniel Defense. We were talking about how the background checks had fallen from a record level to a more normal level, but that the new normal – he just grinned and smiled and goes, but the new normal is much higher than the old normal. And that point was lost on the left. While they were mocking us and making fun because we weren't shattering records, they missed the fact that the new normal that began in December 2016 completely obliterates the old normal. So even when we're not at a record level, as we weren't in June, we're still at extremely high levels for gun sales, for concealed carry permit issuance, for firearm transfers, for all these things. And so the Second Amendment is alive and well.
Indeed it is. Talking with Dr. A.W.R. Hawkins at Breitbart. One last story to talk about. You've got a piece. This was yesterday. Huntress shoots black giraffe, stands her ground amid social media backlash. Once again, Dr. Hawkins, we have this phenomena of a female hunter getting attacked on social media. And for some reason, they love going after the women who hunt, even right. more than they love going after guys who hunt. And, boy, if you get a woman who goes off to Africa on safari, holy cow, she dares post a picture on social media. She is in for it. And so Tess Thompson Talley from Kentucky went to Africa and on safari got a 14-year-old, no, I'm sorry, at least an 18-year-old giraffe, over 4,000 pounds. She said, blessed to be able to get 2,000 pounds of meat from him. And I guess I didn't really know this, but Tess talked about this. As giraffes get older, their fur gets darker. So this was a black giraffe. It's not a special subspecies or anything like that. This has been called a very rare animal. Any excuse that you can think of to go after this woman who dared hunt this creature, including Deborah Messing on Twitter, who wrote, Tess Thompson Talley from Nippa, Kentucky is a disgusting, vile, immoral, heartless, selfish murderer. With joy in her black heart and a beaming smile, she lies next to the dead carcass of this giraffe. That's the type of grief you're going to get.
They say worse things about hunters than they do about terrorists. Here's the deal. What the left doesn't understand, it's just like when they push gun control. They don't understand how a pistol works, a semi-automatic pistol or a rifle, or they don't understand how a pump-action shotgun works, but they want to regulate them all. Trust me. The same thing with these hunters. They don't understand that Tally doesn't just go down there and go, there's a giraffe, I'll shoot it. Doesn't work that way. She has to work with the government there. in that country. That government has a conservation group with which she works. They tell her that this is the, here are a group of animals, here are these, here are this, this is this number of animals. We need to find an animal in this category that we need to pull out of the herd so that the herd can be healthier and continue to grow. And this whole process, there's a tag, specific tag, all this, this is all lost in the left. They live in fairy tale land where they think Tally hopped on a plane, hopped off a plane, probably got in a nice air conditioned vehicle, drove around, saw a giraffe, shot it, and came home. It doesn't work like that. And people have to understand, when the Cecil the Lion deal happened in 2015, and I covered the aftermath, the government down there, not long after Cecil the Lion, all the uproar, said that lion hunting had hit such a lull that the government was thinking they might have to kill up to 200 lions just to keep the group of lions down there healthy, because they were getting aged lions, violent lions who are killing other lions, and they have to be taken out, and no hunters were coming to do it. Hunting is part of conservation. Someone, you just got to get it through your head if you're on the left. Get it through your head. Hunting is part of conservation. And this huntress was taking part in conservation, and as she said, she got 2,000 pounds of meat. So it's a win-win. And the people who complain should be ashamed of themselves.
Well, you know, there, as you say, I think a lot of this comes from a position of ignorance. And, it feels good to love animals. I'm an animal lover myself. I know you are as well, Dr. Hawkins. And so if you're Deborah Messon and you love animals and you see somebody and shot an animal, I understand that emotional outburst of, oh, this is awful. But it, again, you're right. It's up to you. Before you start calling somebody a black-hearted murderer who's amoral, right, maybe you do some research. What would compel somebody to go do this? What are the benefits of hunting? Right? And I think if you do that research, you're right. You may come down on the side of, it's not for me. I would never do it. I'm not really a big hunter. But I don't think you're going to call somebody a murderer. So I don't think you're going to ascribe the worst of intentions to them, knowing the benefits that this hunting provides, both in terms of conservation for the species as well as helping the human beings the ground.
And bring it closer to home. A few years ago in Kentucky, and that's where I'm originally from, and a few years ago in Kentucky, they had an unlimited season on doe. You could have one buck and get unlimited doe, as long as you had a deer, a hunting license. And, you know, if you just look at that, you think, well, that seems like there's going to be a lot of does killed for no reason. No, the fish and game department understood the population was getting so crazy that hunting season was going to be a population control. And what that does is it means that the group of deer that live in that state stay at a sustainable level. There is enough foliage to keep them healthy throughout the year so they can stay warm in the winter. They can stay alive in the summer, so on and so forth. And I don't know that they have every year now unlimited doe. I believe that was special because the population was so high. But people on the left have to understand that's in America. That's how controlled our hunting is. They're always adjusting to keep the population healthy. Down in Africa, it's even more regulated than that. And so where this giraffe was taken on purpose, and there was a reason that specific animal was shot.
Dr. A.W.R. Hawkins with Breitbart. Listen, buddy, I appreciate you coming on the program, sir. Thank you for checking in from the road, and enjoy your Independence Day.
And thank you. And I read some of your tweets. I hope you enjoy your fireworks.
Thank you very much. We plan on it. I appreciate it. Dr. A.W.R. Hawkins from Breitbart on Twitter at A.W.R. Hawkins. Still to come on the program, Sheila Gunn-Reed of The Rebel will join us on the show. We'll talk about what's going on up in Toronto, where there is an increase in violent crime. And the mayor there says there's no easy answer to figuring this out. Stick around. We've got more Cam and Company on the way right after this. So I'm with Dan Drake, the president and CEO of Odor Crusher. Dan is going to talk with you, sir.
No, thanks for coming out. Gosh.
I appreciate you becoming our on-location sponsor, the sponsor of our Good Guys segment on Cam and Company every day. So I want to thank you for that. Your name is known out there. This is a great product, and I think, you know, I'm really pleased that so many folks have such a positive response. But for folks who maybe haven't heard of Odor Crusher,
right,
let's talk about what it is that this company is all about.
Absolutely. So we started out really on the hunting side of the business with Scent Crusher. So hunters started using the products.
and we were named the best new product in the hunting industry for a couple years in a row. And really, it was my friends I had in law enforcement that went, gosh, can we use this on the law enforcement side? Will you teach us, or will you make something for us that's specific to us? So what our technology does is we use ozone, and you put it in one of our bags or closets or in the car, and we blow ozone into it, and it kills all the smell and, more importantly, the bacteria that sits there. So in the hunting world, you can now be 20 yards from a deer because they can't smell you. In the sports world, it kills all the smells in hockey, football, soccer. But in the military and tactical and police side, it now will take care of all that body armor, your helmets, your shoes, your gloves that you can't clean anymore.
That's amazing. All right, so can we kind of like look and see some of the products here?
Yep, so this is kind of the hunting side of the business. And, again, closets and bags that you can put all your stuff in. And then we'll go down and we'll look at the tactical side of the business.
Sure, absolutely. Come with me. So what are we looking at here, Dan?
So this is really kind of our full line of stuff that we created for police officers, military, and tactical side. So these are range bags or duty bags that officers have, fully mollied up, set up here so they can put pens and business cards and, you know, whatever they need or are going to use on a daily basis, and the same on the inside, all mollied up, separated to be able to be used, you know, clipboards set to set up their cell phones, whatever they're doing for the day that sits right next to them. So again, they can now take their tactical gear, their bulletproof vest at the end of the day, throw it in here, plug it in their cigarette lighter, plug it into their wall outlet at home, and they're set. It's as simple as, let's turn this on here, turning it on, hitting the button, running it for 30 minutes, boom, everything's clean.
That's it?
That's
amazing.
That's it. So,
all right, so I know it's not magic, because I know you said ozone, but yeah, this kind of seems like magic. How does this actually work?
So I actually hired two guys from NASA who had done the International Space Station in ozone to design the products originally. So ozone is the O3 molecule, oxygen's the O2. In nature, electricity or lightning blows apart the oxygen molecules and they make ozone. It's that fresh smell that you have after a rainstorm. So we've essentially created a little mini electrical storm in here, made the ozone, harvested it off and blown it into a bag or a backpack or a closet. In 45 minutes, it becomes oxygen again. So there's nothing harmful about it. It's nature's way of kind of cleaning the bacteria and stuff that sits in the environment.
And you guys, it seems like you have a full lineup here. I mean, we're looking, as you say, like, you know, this would be a great range bag, but you got some big boys over here, right?
So this is kind of our first responding actor shooter backpack. So you can pull it up over you and have front and back protection for you if you need that. A regular backpack here to carry around, or... We've got giant bags here, so you can put your gun or your bow or whatever you might have underneath here and then carry around all your gear inside. And again, same technology sits right here.
That's amazing. And even the hard case stuff. Now, this, I got to tell you, with our crew, because we pack a lot of stuff every time we go on the road, so we're using these hard cases. And honestly, I mean, I had a lot of our guys say, hey, let's look at this stuff. So this is, I mean, this is amazing. This is an actual chest right here.
Rough, tough handle, wheels. You guys can toss it around, and then at the end of the day, throw all your gear in here, hit the button, 30 minutes, it's all clean.
This is the coolest stuff, Dan. I got to tell you, I'm really, really impressed. How can folks get one for their own? You know, how can they get one
for purchase? We are working with distributors now on the LE side. We've got 15 or 20 distributors around the country. Or you can go to our website, odorcrusher.com, or on Amazon and find the gear and buy it.
Awesome. Now, where is Odorcrusher located? Where's HQ for you?
Wichita, Kansas.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
The Midwest.
I love it. All right. Odorcrusher.com. Dan Drake, thank you so much for spending some time
with
us, sir. It's great talking with you today. Welcome back to Cam and Company. Glad you are with us today. Just a reminder again, we will be off tomorrow, but we'll be back on Thursday and Friday with the live programming right here on NRA TV. And I want to welcome to the program right now from the Rebel, Sheila Gunn Reid is with us on the program. Sheila, how are you?
I'm great, Cam. Thanks for having me.
It is my pleasure. And I was going to ask, we've been asking because, you know, tomorrow's Independence Day here in the United States. I've been asking all of our guests, do you have any Independence Day traditions? I realize it might be kind of hard to ask a Canadian, how do you celebrate Independence Day? And you're not even in Canada right now. So how does a Canadian who's, where are you, by the way?
I'm right now I'm in Jerusalem. So I'm on a work tour of the state of Israel. We've gone from the top to the bottom. We've been on the Syrian border where we've heard the shelling of the Syrian civil war. We've been at the top where we've seen the Hezbollah terrorists across the way. So I guess to answer your question, how does a Canadian in Israel celebrate Independence Day? Well, we are going to the brand new embassy to check it out.
Okay, that's a pretty good way to celebrate Independence Day in Israel. And I imagine actually that there are going to be a lot of folks there at the U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem tomorrow who are celebrating the United States of America. Because, you know, honestly and obviously, there is still a great deal of support for the United States in Israel. What have you been hearing, Sheila? We'll talk about what's going on in Canada, but I'm just curious. I mean, sure. As you've been talking to Israelis there, what is the impression that Israelis have of the United States right now?
We are hearing a lot of people talking about the hopefulness and optimism they have with the changing relationship that Donald Trump has as opposed to the relationship that Barack Obama had with the state of Israel. We're hearing a lot of optimism given Trump's hard line that he's taken with Iran. So and that seems to be a consensus attitude from not just the people that we're meeting with for work and the speakers that we're speaking with, but general Israeli people when we're out on the street or when we're having a beer after work. They are very hopeful, and Trump has a lot of fans.
That does not surprise me. I'm glad to hear that. All right, so let's talk about what's going on back home. Because there was a story about the mayor of Toronto, John Tory, talking about how there's no easy answer to deal with the rising violent crime in Toronto. 11 people in Toronto shot since Friday. The latest occurring early this morning, a man shot in an attempted apparent drive-by shooting near the downtown core. Javonte Smart, who is 21 years of age, known as a smoke dog, was killed in a daylight shooting on Saturday, along with 28-year-old Ernest Modecki, and a woman who was shot there in that attack, also expected to recover. This is Toronto, Canada. We've been hearing for years and years, Sheila, that Canada doesn't have these types of problems, that you only find these types of problems in the U.S. or other countries where, you know, the right to bear arms is seen as a right and not a privilege. So what's going on in Toronto right now?
Well, Toronto is quickly devolving into Canada's Chicago. Toronto, under the leadership of Mayor John Tory, the one right now saying there are no easy answers, has basically in itself become a gun-free zone. But like, as you know, most gun-free zones end up just leaving the guns behind for the criminals. John Tory has basically run all the legal gun ranges out of the city, which is really the only place that Canadians can use our handguns. They're all outside of the city limits. So he's purged legal firearms from the city, leaving him this wasteland of illegal firearms and gang violence. John Tory right now, he's saying that there's no easy way, and that may be true. It's not going to be easy to do what he wants to do. But make no mistake, John Tory is a gun control advocate and a very hardline gun control advocate.
Okay, so he acknowledges, it sounds like, that the vast majority of these crimes are gang related. He says we're going to hire more police officers, says he's happy that Doug Ford wants to work on something like this as well. The police chief quoted is saying that the vast majority of gunplay in the city can be associated with a street gang. Having said that, being surgical, being strategic, and being focused with that gang subculture is a huge concern of mine. We've got a plan in play, he said, to look at it, to look after it over the course of the summer. That actually doesn't say much of anything other than we've got a lot of gang-related violence and we're going to keep an eye on things.
Well, that's true. Now, John Tory, earlier in the spring, though, Canada held a gangs and guns summit. And out of that summit came Bill C-71, which would reignite our long gun registry and puts more restrictions on legal handgun users. And a lot of the recommendations that came out of that summit came from John Tory. John Tory has been publicly saying that he firmly believes that a lot of the guns that are ending up in the hands of gangsters within his own city are, they've been brought there through what he calls domestic trafficking. So he thinks that legal gun owners like me are running off to the store and buying 40 handguns, which we have to register in this country, and then we're selling them to gangbangers in his city, when that's just not true and it's just not possible under Canadian gun laws. He actually thinks that straw purchases are the reason that he has this handgun problem in his city.
Straw purchases, really?
Yeah.
So the answer to address this gang-related violence is to impose more laws on legal gun owners in the hopes that this will have some sort of trickle-down effect on violent criminals.
Right. John Tory has even gone so far as to say that there should be a limit on guns that legal, registered, licensed firearms owners can have. He thinks that normal people are the problem and we're just somehow participating in the trafficking of illegal firearms to the gangs that are turning his city into Chicago.
Unbelievable. And you know, Sheila, we've talked a little bit about what's going on with C-71. Gun control advocates are claiming that the bill's getting watered down, that it doesn't go far enough now. And this bill is still making its way through Parliament. I mean, what do you ultimately expect is going to happen with that gun control bill? Is it going to get beefed up? Are there going to be those additional restrictions placed on legal gun owners in Canada because of the increasing violence in Toronto? Is that likely to happen?
The bill itself passed our parliament at the end of June, so that will head off to the Senate, where it will likely pass as is or receive additional amendments to make it even stronger, because our Senate is liberal dominated. So, you know, liberals everywhere, they got a liberal, right? So the chances are that they will respond to John Tory's problems of gang violence by cracking down on legal firearms owners like me.
Well, listen, Sheila, I appreciate you coming on the program. You know, maybe it's better just to stay in Israel for as long as you can.
You know, I'm enjoying a well-armed society over here. I have to admit, it's there's a level of security when there is an armed person on every street corner. It's incredible.
Well, listen, I appreciate you taking time out of your day to talk with us. Enjoy the rest of your time there in Jerusalem. Sheila Gunn-Reid from The Rebel, and make sure you're following Sheila on Twitter right now at Sheila Gunn-Reid. That'd be Gunn with two N's. Cameron, let's go on a work tour of Israel. Can we do that, you think?
I've already asked her to put in the good word with Ezra for us. Man, got to get over that. I'm a 46-year-old Jew who has never been to Israel. It's pretty embarrassing. It's ridiculous at this point.
That is embarrassing. I
agree.
That's absurd.
It's awful.
Well, listen, I'm a 43-year-old guy who's never been to Scotland, which is, I guess, where, you know, most of my family's from. So we can do a little stopover in Scotland.
Fine.
And go over to.
Sounds great.
I don't want to spend too much time there, though. They're turning as boy, holy cow. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez would be seen as like a retrograde conservative over in Scotland. I mean, I don't
right.
I don't know about that, but I would love to get over to Israel just for a week, just to see everything. Because again, I mean, not only from a current events perspective, but from a history perspective, to be right there would be absolutely incredible. All right. Now, we only have a couple minutes left here on this edition of Cam and Company, but just a reminder again that we will be back with you live on Thursday, 2 p.m. Eastern. Let's see, Hubert writing in on Twitter. My take from Canada, he says, is that this universal registration will help Canadians, especially if a registered gun to John Smith comes to Canada. Canada will extradite Mr. Smith and find out why his gun is in a Canadian punk's hand. Maybe Mr. Smith should not, or should smarten up and not sell guns illegally. So Hubert says, okay, so if a gun is recovered in Toronto and it's traced back to, you know, John Smith in Buffalo, New York, that the Canadian authorities are going to extradite John Smith and find out why his gun is in a Canadian punk's hand. To which I would respond, Hubert, I don't think you know much about the criminal justice system. The idea that the Canadian government, and look, I could be wrong on this, but the idea that the Canadian government is going to extradite an American citizen over a what amounts to a stolen firearm, I don't really think you understand the finite amount of resources that law enforcement has. They're not going to extradite somebody to another to Canada to do an investigation on a stolen firearm. They're just not. You know, listen, you've got issues right now. In Toronto with gang violence. And frankly, I would be concerned that this is going to spread. Because you look at other big cities across Canada, Vancouver, for example, has its share of gang-related violence, but it's got an ever-increasing amount of opioid overdoses. So the gangs who are selling and supplying the fentanyl and the carfentanil and the heroin are taking deeper root in those communities. You know, if this were a simple solution of, well, we'll just round up those Americans when we find these firearms that could be traced back to them, we'll just bring them all north of the border. Considering most criminals are getting their guns either through family and friends or through theft, you're not likely to solve many cases that way. Now, if you want to get tough on the violent criminals themselves, you might be able to do that. The mayor of Toronto did say that he wants to end bail for violent criminals who have previous violent offenses, who are charged with a violent crime. They want to keep them behind bars while they await trial. That might do something to cut down on the violent crime. But ultimately what you're going to have to do is you're really going to have to deal with the gang culture, not the gun culture, but the gang culture there in Canada. All right, that music means we've got to scoot. Enjoy your Independence Day wherever it may take you. If you've got Beatles tribute bands or fireworks, parades, hot dog eating contests, just remember, spend a little bit of time celebrating what Independence Day is all about. And we will talk to you again live right here on NRA TV on Thursday.